using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 16th of August, 2021, day 520 of America Held Hostage. Well, today we're going to look at the rapid collapse of Afghanistan. And we're also going to look at America's longest war, which is not Afghanistan. But America's longest-running war is still going. And it gives us a hint of what is to come domestically. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of the...
Well, I called it. Called it last year. Called it a couple of months ago. Called it again about 6 weeks ago when Biden says this is not going to be a reenactment of Saigon. And yet that is exactly what has happened. Who knew? Who knew that a morally bankrupt country, a morally bankrupt empire, would produce this kind of loss and suffering? Yeah, to paraphrase a Hemingway character who was very wealthy and went bankrupt, and one of the other characters in the book asked him, how does somebody that had that much money, how do you go bankrupt? And he said, first gradually, then suddenly. That's the way that empires go as well. That's the way that an immoral war goes, whether it's Vietnam or whether it is Afghanistan. And so have we learned anything? We have Biden promising that Kabul would not turn into Saigon, but pictures show exactly the same scenario. And you can see the pictures as you look at them. It's been all over social media, the press, everywhere. The two helicopters, you can't tell Saigon from Kabul. And it's based on the same thing. You know, we had the domino theory. It's why we had to be in Vietnam, right? It was a lie. It was an obvious lie. As a matter of fact, Errol Morris, a documentary filmmaker, when he talked to Robert McNamara, amazing film, actually. You should see it. But, you know, he had a way that he would get people to dialogue with him and open up and be very honest about it, because instead of talking to them face-to-face, and before Errol Morris became a documentary filmmaker, he was an investigator. So he's got a knack for asking the right questions and knowing how to continue to get people to talk, to finally get them off guard. And so what he did was he took a teleprompter and he put it in reverse and called it an interotron. And so what people are doing is they were talking to a monitor, kind of like we've all been doing pretty much for the last year, like a Zoom class, but it was pretty novel at the time. And I guess that tells us something about how we let our guard down. You know, when we're on Zoom, you might ask Jeffrey Toobin about that. But when he was talking to when he was talking to Robert McNamara, he'd get in another room and he'd talk to him via this box instead of face-to-face. And he did it for a couple of days, and then he put together a documentary film. And so McNamara still was a bit guarded. He tried to make the case that what had been done in Vietnam was not as bad as what we'd done in World War II. And he said, see, you liked World War II. Yeah, but we had that massive firebombing campaign, Dresden, and other places at the end of the war. Actually, it was more destructive than the nuclear bombs that we dropped on Japan. And he said, you know, if we'd lost, we would have been persecuted as war criminals. And what he was trying to do was to explain away what he had done. The difference between the two, of course, was that one was a just war. The other was unjustified and unjustifiable. And he did recount in the story how years later, and it had been a few years before he did this interview, he said they met with some of their, what had been their counterparts in North Vietnam, who then ran the country, at a dinner. And he said one of the guys stood up and banged on the table and he said, what were you thinking, domino theory? He says, don't you realize we've been fighting the Chinese and they've been fighting us for over 1,000 years? Don't you know anything about history? Well, no, they didn't, evidently. Or if they did know, you know, McNamara is supposed to be a whiz kid, so smart and so forth. Maybe he did know. Maybe he did know. Maybe he just didn't care. And so our Afghanistan war, is it a domino theory? Yeah, we had not one building, but two buildings, and three buildings all fell down into their footprint. They didn't fall over like dominoes. As a matter of fact, as said many times, we didn't have television at the time. And we were blessed to move to an area that had no TV reception. And about 5-6 years earlier. And so we're getting phone calls from people about it. And then somebody called and said, well, one of the buildings just fell down. And I thought, wow, can't imagine what a wide path of destruction that must have caused if it toppled somehow. And I didn't realize for quite some time that it fell into its own footprint. And so, you know, we have this domino theory where three steel skyscrapers fall into their footprint when only two of them are hit by a plane. And on the basis of that, we justified a war against Afghanistan. That was a conspiracy theory. It was one that was as absurd as the magic bullet, perhaps even more absurd. And that was the basis of this war. Though President Biden and all of his officials will place the blame on this dumpster fire at the hands of the inept Afghan National Army, writes WND, or on former President Trump, even the media holds Biden responsible, which is remarkable. A CNN national security analyst, Peter Bergen, notes the similarities between the fall of Afghanistan, what happened in Iraq, following the 2011 withdrawal of U.S. troops from the country during the Obama administration, when Biden was vice president. Within 3 years, ISIS was in control. Bergen reminds us it was then Vice President Joe Biden who negotiated the Obama administration's drawdown from Iraq. So there's lots of finger-pointing, lots of talk about how we could have won if we'd done this, we could have won if we'd done that. You know, we've had 20 years. We've gone from Republican to Democrat, from Republican to Democrat, and nobody seems to know how to win an asymmetric war against men in caves. But of course, they're pretty formidable, these men in caves. They can fly planes lower and faster than the pilots who've flown them for decades and taught other pilots. So they're pretty formidable guys. Traffic jams now at the Kabul airport as thousands try to flee the Taliban takeover. I wonder if they have to go through airport security. I wonder if they have to wear masks. Do they have to show their vaccine ID before they get on? Well, actually, there's some stuff that's just about as crazy. We'll tell you about that in a moment. The impending full takeover of the Taliban has caused full-blown traffic collapse across the capital. Footage circulating online shows the city's streets packed with cars as people try to either get to home or to the airport. Those desperate to flee the Taliban were seen heading toward the airport on foot while hauling their belongings. A large group of those seeking to leave the country was filmed by the airport's entrance as several shots apparently fired by security there to try to get the crowd under control. Yeah, you know, people are kind of getting crazy here. Let's fire some shots in the air to get things under control. I think it might just have just the opposite effect. Anyway, the gunfire at the airport resulted in the suspension of commercial flights, reported Reuters. From that moment on, evacuations proceeded only via military aircraft. You can see a lot of people boarding a C-17 Globemaster heavy cargo military plane, presumably belonging to the U.S. Air Force. And of course, they were ferrying people there from the embassy. They evacuated about 500 people from the embassy, they say. They've got everybody. Later in the day, U.S. servicemen were seen establishing a security perimeter around the airport, but it was not immediately clear whether they secured the whole facility. So you have hundreds of U.S. citizens scrambling on board a C-17 as Taliban declares, quote, the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. Both the U.S. and Afghan government have asked the Taliban to hold off for 2 weeks until a transitional government could be agreed to. And a senior Afghan official says, I do not think the Taliban will accept the offer. That's right. It's just an official said military helicopters are shuttling between the embassy compound and the airport, kind of like Saigon, where a core presence will remain for as long as possible given security conditions. In addition to seizing Kabul, Taliban forces now hold all of Afghanistan's border crossings, said the AP. The news agency added that Afghan forces had surrendered Bagram Air Force Base north of Kabul. Remember, we talked about that. You know, they snuck out in the dead of night, and it was actually an Onion piece about 10 years ago. You know, since it was pretty obvious for a long time that there was really no end in sight. Those people who the generals were saying were going to stay there for another 20 years. Say, what is that for? Is that for the lithium? Is it for rare earth minerals? Or is it just so they can have a practice firing range? Nevertheless, the position was untenable, became increasingly obvious, very obvious last year. And so when they left in Bagram Air Force Base, and that was the amazing thing. They just left in the dead of night, didn't tell the Afghan forces that they were going. Left massive amounts of material there. That material is now in the hands of the Taliban. As one veteran said, they should have kept Bagram Air Force Base open till the very end and then had people evacuate through that. But, you know, that would be if we were being run by people who had some sense, some clue about even how to conduct this from a pragmatic standpoint, instead of the mendacious bureaucracy that the Pentagon has become. Just unbelievable. Just a bunch of incompetent, lying bureaucrats, just like everything else in the federal government. The Taliban, who controlled none of Afghanistan's 34 provincial capitals over a week ago, has now seized the bulk of the country, now ready to assume power, and they have. So as this is happening, like I said, you know, the people that they're evacuating, do they have to wear masks? Do they have to have vaccines in order to fly? I mean, that's the condition of getting back in the U.S. now, is having vaccines to get in. Now, they'll probably waive that for their embassy personnel, or they've already vaxxed them up. But if you are an American there trying to get out, not necessarily directly working for the embassy, you're told to, the embassy was telling U.S. citizens to shelter in place. Are you kidding me? I mean, the whole city is collapsing and the Taliban are driving through the streets with their commandeered trucks and vehicles. So you should just shelter in place. And if you wanted to get out, you needed to register online. U.S., quote, U.S. citizens wanting assistance in departing the country should register for any option that might be identified to return to the United States and must complete this repatriation assistance request for each traveler in their group. I'm sorry, have you filled out the RAR? Well, I'm sorry, you'll just have to shelter in place until you can fill out that RAR online. What did I say about a mendacious bureaucracy? It's not just the Pentagon. It's everything. It's the embassy, everything. U.S. ambassador's out, though. He left. He fleed. He flew. He fleed. He left. He left Kabul embassy with a flag. Which flag was that? Was that the LGBT flag, or was that the American flag? Was it the Black Power flag? Which flag did he take? I would like to know. I would like to know which one. U.S. Ambassador Ross Wilson, who fled, I'd like to know which flag he took. State Department spokesman Ned Price, how would you like to be that guy? You know, you've got to put a happy face on this situation. Here's what he did. He just lied. Like most government officials, you get into a difficult situation, you just deny reality. You just deny it. No. I did not have sex with that woman. I don't care what kind of dress you've got. State Department official Ned Price said, quote, "This is not abandonment." We really love them. Remember, saying we love them so much. "This is not abandonment. This is not an evacuation. This is not the wholesale withdrawal." See what I said? When faced with a difficult situation, the government will just flat out lie to you. As always. As a matter of fact, they lie to you even when they don't have a difficult situation. They lie to you and tell you it is a difficult situation. It's a pandemic. We're going to have to take everything from you. He said, what this is a reduction in the size of our civilian footprint. Uh-huh. Okay. And bold-faced type. They write, quote, "Do not call the U.S. Embassy in Kabul for details or updates about the flight. This form is the only way to communicate interest in flight options." That's your RAR. Online, of course. But I don't know if that's going to get through. Because, you know, I mean, they've evacuated the embassy. The ambassador has bugged out with a flag. We don't know if it was the American flag or what flag it was. Because they've gotten in the habit of flying some really strange flags over our embassies, haven't they? And as he's left, and the other people have left, before they left, they were in the burn document stage. So they were destroying everything. They were destroying the equipment. They were destroying documents and so forth. But that's okay. If you're a U.S. citizen there, you can count on the government's help. You just get online and you send them an RAR and wait. And there'll be another government coming along in a matter of time, and then I don't want to joke about this, but I think we're going to see some horrific situations as people are captured and put on display. As of as of yesterday, the Taliban had 18 out of 34 provincial capitals under their control. A former CIA officer said this is, quote, "the most infamous and devastating press conference ever held by an American president." And what he's talking about is the July 8th press conference where Biden was saying, a reporter asked him, "Is a Taliban takeover of Afghanistan now inevitable?" Biden said, "No, it's not." Reporter, "Why?" Biden, "Because you, the Afghan troops, have 300,000 well-equipped, as well-equipped as an army in the world, and an air force against something like 75,000 Taliban. It is not inevitable." And so that former CIA officer says, "This is the most infamous, devastating press conference ever held by an American president." Well, I don't know. I mean, we've been lied to by a lot of different presidents about a lot of different things, and I don't know if anybody really believed that. I mean, did anybody really believe that? I mean, I went back and covered this yet again when he said that because I didn't believe it. So 5 weeks ago, he's saying there's no way that Americans will be evacuated from the Kabul embassy by helicopter. That was part of it as well, which is now happening. He's not doing too well in terms of the prediction area. The president of former president of Afghanistan, Ghani. Well, Ghani is gone. Ghani ran out of there. "From hubris to humiliation, America's warrior class contends with the abject failure of its Afghanistan project." This is from MSN. You notice that they call a 20-year war a project. We've made a lot of progress, haven't we, from the first police action back in the Korean War, where we hadn't been attacked, and we went in there preemptively. So now this is a project. It's a project. Mark Milley, the woke general, also said back in July, Afghan security forces have the capacity to defend their country. And now he's saying he's just heartbroken that they didn't do it. They didn't even tell him they were leaving Bagram Air Force Base. But, you know, hey, it's their fault. It's not us. It's not us at all. Lloyd Austin, another military genius who has been more focused on LGBT. That's why I'm saying, you know, what flag did they take with him? Says he is, quote, beyond disappointed. I'm so disappointed in this Afghan army. No responsibility for them, is there? This whole thing has become musical chairs with everybody pointing fingers at each other. They knew the music was going to stop. That may be one of the reasons why Trump threw the election to them by doing a lockdown election with all the mail-in ballots and all the rest of this stuff. Or maybe he was just told by his handlers. That's most likely what it was. But yeah, musical chairs by the military. You had, Breitbart and a lot of people very upset with Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday. He asked some pointed questions to Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State. Let me read you the back and forth here. Wallace said, critics say that for the U.S. to cut a deal with the Taliban without the Afghan government even in the room was hugely demoralizing and led inevitably to where we are today. Pompeo said, Chris, that's simply not true. Go read the deal. Go read the conditions that were built into the deal. I was in the room. I was at the center of working to deliver that. Well, it's not exactly a denial that they cut a deal with the Taliban without the Afghan government even being in the room. So maybe that was true. I don't know. He didn't deny it. Wallace continued. I just want to ask you one more question about your record, though, sir. You were the first American Secretary of State to ever meet with the Taliban, and you talked about how they had agreed to join the fight against terrorism. Was that really credible when that happened? No. What was that? That was an acknowledgement, as Rand Paul was saying, well over a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, because I think it was 2 years ago. I think it was before all this. I think it was before they went to war with us here in America, before the federal government under Trump went to war with us. They realized that they couldn't win that war over there. So they were saying it's just a matter of time. There is no military option. Rand Paul said, I've got a lot of people in the Pentagon saying that to me. But, of course, they wouldn't say it publicly. And they wouldn't get out of there gracefully. They wouldn't stop. So then they left in a disorganized way. But anyway, Pompeo says, he said, you talked about how they'd agreed to join the fight against terrorism. And he said, do you regret giving the Taliban that legitimacy? Do you regret pressing the Afghan government to release 5,000 prisoners, which they did, some of whom are now back on the battlefield fighting with the Taliban? Pompeo said, you make peace with your enemies. Let's see if that happens. Maybe the Taliban will make peace with their enemies. They are now flying, among other things that they've captured, are helicopters, and they've learned to fly those. I mean, why not? I mean, if these guys can fly a commercial airline in ways that the people who've flown them for decades are unable to do, I'm not surprised that you've got these geniuses at the Taliban flying military helicopters over Afghanistan. They're probably flying them lower and faster than anybody else can fly them as well. The weapon seizure, massive boom for the Taliban. They've been able to, as we had Joe Biden saying in his ill-fated press conference, he said, quote, we provided our Afghan partners with all the tools. Let me emphasize all the tools. And now the people that we fought for 20 years have all the tools, because we've been governed by tools. Tools like Biden, tools like Trump, tools like Obama and George W. Bush. They're just tools. Tools of the military-industrial complex. The military-industrial complex likes to sell tools. They'll give them away to anybody. They don't care. There's no, evidently, any plan about any of this stuff in from a pragmatic standpoint. CNN praises the Taliban for wearing masks during the attack. I know. It could be real, but it is the Babylon Bee. Why did my friend get blown up? For what? Asked one Afghan war veteran. Many are asking that. And that is the question. In all seriousness, we should be talking about the futility of war. And we should be talking about what a just war is. But instead, we have each of these professional wrestling teams pointing the finger at the other and saying, it was your fault. It was both of their faults. It's Republican and Democrat bipartisan policy to run this war for 20 years. It was the Pentagon that has yet again lost another asymmetric war. They can go in with their massive tools and they can devastate an area, just like Biden and Eric Swalwell and Beto O'Rourke were saying, you know, we have F-35s, we've got nuclear weapons. You think you can stop us with your Second Amendment? We can use that against Americans, and that's what's coming next. Mark my word, that's what's coming next. They're purging people out of the military right now who have a religious conscience, who won't take the vaccine. They're purging people who are not going to be mindless robots out of the military. They're bragging about using their state-of-the-art stuff against a population that is armed with small weapons, and yet they have been consistently defeated over the last 60 years by such populations that were not as heavily armed as the American population is. They're not going to win this war either, but that won't stop them from creating devastation because these people ultimately are following Satan. The satanic American government is taking orders, and their main objective is to kill as many people as possible. They don't have any plans. They didn't have any plans in Vietnam to win anything. They didn't have any plans in Afghanistan or Iraq. There's plan to kill. That's what this government is. Has been for a long time. Let's talk about what a just war would look like if we had a just government, if we had a just society, if we just followed the Constitution that they swore to uphold. Thomas Aquinas wrote the just war theory, and it's something that has really kind of informed Western civilization. It's why we wear uniforms and the Taliban doesn't. Because we want to try to minimize civilian casualties. And so we want to identify who the combatants are. We want to stop when there is no point of continuing on. We want to try to limit the destruction, not just with civilians. So there's a few things in the just war theory. First of all, to be justified, it has to be a war that is called by sovereign authority. Now, what that looks like in America is the sovereign authority, again, is not the president, is not the Supreme Court, it's not Congress, it's not the governors. The sovereign authority is the Constitution. And this is what the people who want to, the Christians now, who really need to understand what's going on. The sovereign authority in America is the law. The supreme law of the land is the Constitution. Everyone swears to abide by it. That is a condition of them exercising the powers of their office. And they only have authority as long as they are obeying the Constitution. At that point, they are rebels. And they have power, but it's the same type of power that a drug cartel has. A lot of similarity, actually, between the two. So there has to be sovereign authority and for that war. And it has to be a just cause, meaning the combatants have a morally right intentions. This is not being done, in other words, for vengeance or for profit. because it is being done to neutralize an attack in order to save innocent life. It's not retribution. And, of course, a just war excludes all preemptive attacks because it has to be defensive. So it cannot intend intrinsically evil actions. A good action, or at least a morally neutral action, will have two effects, a good intended, and it will also have an evil that is not intended but tolerated in war, because war is evil. Proportionality, the good to be achieved, should outweigh the evil of the war. Wars are justified when they are in defense of common goods. The sovereign has care for the common good of a particular nation. And it is also, when we look at this, as I pointed out in the just war theory, Thomas Aquinas and others, it has been a longstanding understanding of Western civilization based on Christian principles, that opposition to a tyrant can be permissible because a tyrannical government is not just. It is directed not to the common good, but to the private good of the ruler. And this is why I keep saying, when we talk about Romans 13 or 1 Peter 2, when we talk about the government, an indication of a government that has authority from God, not just power granted from God, is the fact that it rewards good and punishes evil. And if it is a tyrannical government, if it is Adolf Hitler, if it is Joseph Stalin, you not only have the right, but the duty to oppose that. That's what the Declaration of Independence says. And I agree with that. I believe that it is a clear principle throughout the Bible that we are to stand against injustice and corruption, that is an abomination to God, let alone the sacrifice of children for our perceived economic good or for producing medicines, so-called medicines, as the FDA and the NIH are doing. Resistance to a tyrant is not permissible if the tyrant's rule to be disturbed so inordinately that his subjects suffer greater harm from the consequent disturbance. And this is one of the reasons why this has not happened. Because we look at this and we say, well, up to a point, you want to try to live peacefully with everybody, and you have to look at it and say, well, what is the line that if the government, you know, if you oppose a tyrant, there'll be bloodshed. So what is that line? Does that line come when the tyrant tells you that you will take a toxic genetic code injection or you'll not live your life? When the government starts laying plans, saying that anybody disagrees with us is a terrorist and starts hiring people to run prison camps? What is the line? You cannot intend intrinsically evil actions. Combatants must respect non-combatants. This is why the Muslim countries, the people like the Taliban, are not following the Christian rules for just war. And oh, by the way, we aren't either anymore. Our country has become pagan. Combatants, once they cease to be combatants, surrender or wounded, you treat them with respect. You treat them with care. Civilians are not targeted. By the way, you know, talking about targeting civilians, I mean literally targeting civilians, you know, that's one of the reasons why they came after Julian Assange so hard. It's far more that than it is the embarrassing documents about Hillary Clinton. And I say embarrassing because it doesn't matter what kind of crimes Hillary Clinton commits, they're not going to have any legal consequences for her. But it was embarrassing for her. But what the military-industrial complex is really concerned about is that video. Collateral damage. There was a video recording through the sites where it showed that they were deliberately targeting civilians, shot them, shot a cameraman. You could see that he was holding a camera on his shoulder. And then waited until the ambulance arrived. And as they're putting the people that they just shot in the ambulance, they shoot the ambulance up as well with a heavy gun. It's called Collateral Murder was the name of that video as it circulated around by WikiLeaks and other people. And so if you want to talk about a just war, you don't target civilians. Civilian casualties, while foreseeable, cannot be intentional. We have violated every principle of the just war. And I'm absolutely amazed to see how blind Christians are to this. How they cheer it. How many Christians out there are saying, well, now we need to go back and do it right. Yeah, get Biden out of there so we can have a good war. We can do it right. Were America's decades in Afghanistan worth it? AP News asks some veterans. And I guess that's a rhetorical question. Maybe some of them think it was. But again, it all comes down to it being justified. And the people who will go to an unjust war are the people who will have you, as they did in Vietnam, take an area at great cost of life on both sides, and then abandon it again. They just have no reason whatsoever for being there. It's just perhaps a training exercise. Pat Buchanan asks, who lost America's longest war? This is the musical chairs aspect of this, pointing fingers at different politicians. But he does point out that a lot of the blame, of course, goes to the perpetual Pentagon, these bureaucrats that are there from one regime to the other. How many U.S. generals knew what was going on but declined to risk their careers by telling Congress or the country that the Afghan army and the regime we had stood up would likely collapse like a house of cards once the Americans departed, and they had to face the Taliban alone? But again, comes back down to the pragmatic aspects of this, not the moral aspects of this. The morality, the immorality of this war is not in view by anybody. I don't see anybody commenting on the fact that this was predicated on a false flag, the fact that it was not a justified war because of that. 20 years of war in Afghanistan has cost the U.S. taxpayers more than $2.2 trillion. There's that aspect of it as well. $88 billion training the Afghan army for 20 years, and it collapsed in 1 month, said one analyst. And then we have the really ugly side of the Republican Party. Ben Sasse, Liz Cheney. Ben Sasse has now identified himself as a Liz Cheney-style neocon. The Trump-Biden doctrine of weakness is what he was talking about, echoing Liz Cheney. Writing on Twitter, Cheney said the situation in Afghanistan, quote, began with the Trump administration negotiating with terrorists and pretending they were partners for peace, and it's ending with the American surrender as Biden abandons the country to our terrorist enemies. Liz, this is not our country. And the 9/11 narrative sold to us by George W. Bush and your father was one of the most obvious lies ever told by a government. Joe Biden is taking a vacation. So when the heat builds up, he just has to go to Camp David. He's not, as Jim Jordan is saying, why is Joe Biden on vacation? Why hasn't his administration taken a single question? This is an embarrassment. Tom Cotton, senator, demanded that Biden immediately address the nation. They say, well, he's not on vacation. He's working. But he's not saying anything to anybody. One thing he has said when he finally issued a statement, I inherited a deal cut by my predecessor. Does he mean Obama? They won't accept responsibility. Trump never accepted responsibility for anything in his administration. Nothing. Nothing. He takes credit for the vaccine. He doesn't want to take responsibility for the deaths, the injuries. They don't take the presidents today are not like Harry Truman, who said, got a sign on his desk, says the buck stops here. No, they keep passing the buck and passing the buck and passing. They pass it to everybody. So, yeah, it's these one puppet after the other. They're not the real government anyway, Biden and Trump. They're propped up by the left wing or the right wing of the intelligence agencies, the same people who are running these corrupt wars, running this corrupt bureaucratic empire, this Byzantine empire. I mean, when you talk about a corrupt empire like the Byzantine Empire, one of the things that characterized it was just a massive amount of red tape, highlighted by the fact that if you want to leave the country as a U.S. citizen, you should shelter in place while you file a RAR online. Yeah, Biden has also released as part of his statement, he pledges to accept Afghanistan refugees. Of course, we cannot have enough people come into this country that are not citizens. And then he says, maybe we'll reinvade the country. That's the other thing he did besides blaming Trump. Maybe we'll reinvade. Maybe we'll do it again. Let's try that again. Maybe this time we could get it right. Yeah, that's not actually the Babylon Bee. Let me tell you, though, I said this is not America's longest running war. You know what America's longest running war is? Is it the war on poverty? No. No, I mean this is really long. This is the drug war. Drug war. Doesn't even go back to June of 1971. I let that anniversary go by without celebrating what Nixon did. You know, we had Tony Arterburn on Friday to talk about the 50th anniversary of Richard Nixon taking us off of the gold standard and, becoming the father of fiat forever, fiat currency. But, of course, a couple of months earlier, he had started the war on drugs. 10 years earlier, the UN had actually put it together, had four different schedules of drugs. Schedule one, drugs that are highly addictive and have no medicinal purpose, and they put marijuana in there. So they set that up, they put the drugs in, and Richard Nixon just signed his name to it, put our name at the top, and called it his drug war. But it had been there 10 years earlier. It was a UN agenda. But it goes back even longer than that. It's even longer than 50 years. It goes back to 1914, the Harrison Narcotics Act. So 107 years. There you go. There's the video if you want to see it on BitChute. Richard Nixon with his victory over the dollar. But the war on drugs, the Afghan war lasted 20 years, but this one, or just shy of 20 years. This one's been going on for 107 years. It's a war against us domestically. It's a war against the Constitution. It's a war that has corrupted our courts, corrupted our law enforcement organizations, and it has bled us financially and in every other way. That's really America's longest running war. The war on drugs. As a matter of fact, that Harrison Narcotics Act, it focused on opiates. Opiates and cocaine. So how's that working out for us? Perhaps the most devastating part of the drug addiction that has happened in America was the opioid epidemic. And that was not something that was done by these drug cartels operating in black markets. That was done to Americans by the big pharmaceutical companies who have taken over the AMA and medical practices. So when we look at this 107-year war on drugs, and we look at the fact that it began with a war on opiates, and that has been the most devastating thing, because this is people who had a pain issue and they were addicted to drugs by doctors, not because they're looking to get kicks, but because the doctors are looking to get kickbacks from the big pharmaceutical companies. So, you can talk about vice. The problem with vice is that it invites corruption, because a lot of law enforcement looks at it differently, and it is different. Vice is something that you do that harms yourself. And crime, where you rob somebody, you beat somebody, or you murder somebody, you don't have that much corruption. I mean, you can bribe somebody if it's murder that involves a lot of money. You could bribe the detective to help you get off and share him some of the money. But typically that doesn't happen like it does with drugs or with prostitution. Those are things that people are doing that are harmful to themselves. And the real answer to that doesn't lie in law enforcement, doesn't even lie in government. Those are spiritual issues. And because we have made a God out of government, because we no longer believe that Christ has the power to change, as a society, we don't believe that. We have decided that we can change people by bludgeoning them or putting them in a cell for the rest of their life. And that hasn't worked too well for us. So it began with the 1914 Harrison Act to focus on opiates. Then in 1937, we had the Marijuana Tax Act, beginning of reefer madness. Then you had Nixon in 1971 implementing the UN's 1961 drug policy. And Nixon created the DEA in 1973. It's amazing when you stop and think about how many of these perpetual bureaucracies were created by Richard Nixon. He created the DEA. He created the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. He created the Department of Energy, a Department of Energy that was so absurd that Rick Perry said it's one of the three he's going to get rid of. And yet he wound up, he was going to get rid of it. And then a few years later, he can essentially say, I are the Department of Energy. He forgot to do that. The DEA, back in 1973, had 1,400 special agents, about 1,500, 1,470. It had a budget of less than $75 million. Today, they have 5,000 agents, about three times more people, a little bit more than three times. And they have a $2 billion budget. So they've tripled the personnel, and the budget is 27 times bigger, because they're feathering their beds. But when we talk about a war, and we talk about the war on drugs, take a look at this veteran who was sentenced to life in prison for $30 worth of weed. He's now finally going to be freed. This has been going on for a number of years. It was back in 2008, an undercover cop knocked on his door, asked to buy some weed. He had only 0.69 grams and barely enough to roll two joints, and he sold it for $30. He was then raided by the police, kidnapped, and thrown into a cage, as Free Thought Project points out. He was an honorably discharged veteran. He had been in Operation Desert Storm, but then got a life sentence for selling $30 worth of weed. Nothing about excessive punishment is called into question, right? See, this is part of how the war on drugs has brought us civil asset forfeiture, where people have their homes, their cash, their cars, their planes confiscated, their businesses confiscated, without even being charged. They charge the property. They charge the inanimate objects. So you're not found guilty. Your stuff is just taken. And there's no concern about the punishment being excessive. Now, this guy was not a good guy. He had, even in spite of the fact that he was a veteran, he had prior convictions that went back. This is in 2008. So you had 17 years earlier, 1991. He was convicted for dealing cocaine. Then he was subsequently convicted of a simple robbery the next year and the year after that, a burglary in 1997. And theft of under $500 in 2005. So he had been a thief. He'd been a drug dealer prior to that. But, he's a drug dealer and basically became a burglar, a robber, petty theft. His attorney who defended him said there was ample evidence suggesting a struggle with mental illness linked to his military service, not a penchant for criminality behind his rap sheet. Nevertheless, when we look at this, I think that we have to look at these things individually. The war on drugs and the passion to lock everybody up for that, especially black people locked up at a disproportionate rate to the population, You know, when you look at this, you have to keep the Constitution in view, excessive punishment in view. And just one last thing here. You know, we are struggling for successful exports. And now it looks like we found one. Mexican drug dealers are searching now, have become importers of California cannabis. the best, they said, they can find anywhere in the world. And so, you know, it's not just guns that we give them, you know, and false flag attacks. Fast and Furious, Gunwalker, you know, the federal government gave them that. We actually also didn't just export. It's not that the exports have just begun with the marijuana. We exported our war on drugs, actually the UN war on drugs, we exported to them. You could say that the Mexican drug cartels are an American export because the gangs fighting each other is a consequence of our ill-considered war on drugs. But now, literally, they are now buying cannabis. So there you go. I guess that's one thing. Our balance of payments, I guess. I don't know how that's going to work out. We're going to take a quick break. And we'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
Looking for better information? APSRadioNews.com features articles and commentary, along with audio from all the top news from around the world. APSRadioNews.com.
All right, and I just want to remind everybody that you can find this show at TheDavidKnightShow.com. I just had a listener send us a contribution along with a letter. Saying, I'm a truck driver, I don't get a chance to listen to you every day, but I always do on Spotify. It's like, oh, well, I'm not there now. So because this is a rapidly changing landscape, and we've been banned now in the last, I guess it's about 6 weeks, maybe 2 months, we've been banned by PayPal, by Venmo, and also now by Spotify, please make sure that you go to The David Knight Show. If you're not seeing the podcast and not being reminded of that, I still have people saying, I thought you were with InfoWars. I just realized you're not with InfoWars. So it's difficult to get that information out to people, but it is rapidly changing. I suspect that we're going to be going into some new platforms, whether it is social media or video platforms, as well as by necessity, probably going into some different ways if you would like to support us. And again, we're still on Subscribestar. And if you would like to sign up for as little as $5 a month, you know, one cup of coffee, we do about, well, we do 15 hours a week. So over the month, we've got 60 hours worth of content. Hope that you're able to listen while you're doing something or working or driving. If you find that valuable, however much time you listen, there'll be not very much if you are able to give $5 a month. And, of course, it does go up. You can sign up at any level. And we have other ways that you can contribute to us. You can see that at thedavidknightshow.com. We have a mailing address as well as Zelle and some other ways that you can contribute to us. But you'll also see there where we are in case that changes. You'll see where the podcast is. And we're everywhere on pretty much all the different podcast platforms except for Spotify. We're on pretty much all the video platforms except YouTube. Of course, that's where the audiences are. Please take a look at thedavidknightshow.com. Let me talk about a couple of emails that I've received from listeners. This one is from Jason. He says, how is it possible that we as taxpayers have paid for the vaccines that we don't want, and now they are selling something that is already paid for to other countries for 100% plus profit? Should we all not get a return on our unwanted investment? Well, yeah, that's one of the things that really bothers me, that I don't understand that Republicans have just swallowed this pill whole, haven't they? Nobody complaining about the money that was given to the vaccine companies. And, of course, it's not just the fact that we have privatized the profits and socialized the risks and the losses. But, of course, President Trump, besides giving them the money, he struck a deal where we pay nearly $20 per vaccine. And yet, if you look at Europe, they're paying $15. If you look at some of the developing countries, they're paying $10 to $12. But we pay $20, even though we funded the development of this, even though we have our government delivering it. So, there's not going to be any recognition for the taxpayers in this. This is from Raybo. He says, a listener, he says, they'll have to violently purge me. He says, talking about the new DHS bulletin, and we're going to get into that now, saying that Americans who criticize the vaccine are violent extremists. If you criticize the vaccine, if you don't like the lockdown rules, see, they're moving. This is a war against us. The war began with economic sanctions. It's a war against the middle class. It began with them telling us that we're not essential and actually doing something about it. What happened under Trump was far worse than being called deplorable under Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton, I'm absolutely convinced, would not have been able to do what President Trump did to us last year. Nobody would have put up with that. But because it was Trump, you could have people like Alex Jones telling everybody it's 4D chess, or QAnon telling people, trust the plan. Nobody would have trusted Hillary Clinton. They told us to trust a plan that they didn't show, right? There was no plan. There was no plan. They didn't show you a plan. Why would you trust something you haven't even seen? But anyway, he says, the narrative spouting is so blatantly inversed. Who is the threat? I've seriously had it with all the garbage from these infiltrators in our government agencies. We're in our last days as a nation without a doubt. They'll be justifying lynching of the unvaccinated at breakneck pace if this doesn't cease. You've got racist spouting racism, Antifa, the real Nazis, pharmaceutical complex trying to kill me, but no, I'm the danger, apparently. It's ludicrous, but this DHS document definitely shows their hand. They always do. I think they like us to see it coming. That's right. That's right. It is a compulsion with them. They have to show it. I mean, you don't have these. It is a convenient plot device that at the end of these movies, you have the villain who's hatched all this stuff, does a monologue to the hero to say exactly what they did, why they did it, before the guy, the hero who's tied up at the time, apparently breaks his bonds and takes him out. So it's time to break these shackles that they put on us. Now is the time. They've done their little bit of monologuing as supervillains. We know what they're up to. Actually, we've known for more than 520 days. So now is the time to break loose here and resist. This is from Russell. He said, Americans are all too willing to bend at their waists, even bend their knees, when our government requests or demands our obedience. Government's role is to manage. At what point does management become draconian? Consent of the governed is a phrase from the Declaration of Independence. Our government's legitimacy and its moral right to use state power is only justified and legal when derived from the people or society over which that political power is exercised. He says, no violence or revolution is necessary. Our government officials are our employees. We are not their servants or their slaves. They work for us. We can fire them. We don't have to allow them to bully us, to intimidate the population, to lie to us, or to push us around. And what is required for that is for us to simply just live our lives in civil disobedience. And then if they push us around, then it is no longer an act of aggression on our part. And so we have, as we look at the Afghanistan war, 20 years. We look at the drug war, 107 years. This war is actually a continuation of the false flag of 9/11, as I point out many times. Dark winter, they practiced exactly what they did to us this last year, 2 months before 9/11. The week after 9/11, they have a false flag, the anthrax attack. Then 2 months later, they push out the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act to the states to get them to enact this. The federal government is not acting directly in any of this. This is what you have to understand. This is what a lot of people don't understand when I say it's Trump who began all this 520 days ago. It actually began 20 years ago, but he advanced it significantly when he declared, with an executive order, a national state of emergency that released money. It also activated this Model State Health Emergency Powers Act for these governors. It made them little petty tyrants, giving them unbelievable amounts of money under their own personal discretion, many times larger than the state budget. And this is what they had planned and practiced, not just in 2001 with Dark Winter, the end of July, beginning of August in 2001. But then again, they practiced it on an annual basis for the next 20 years, really. And the last one being Event 301. But of course, some years they did two. They did two of them in 2019 because, you know, it was imminent that they were about to roll it out. So this is the other shoe. You know, we had the false flag in 9/11. They got the Afghanistan war out of that. Then we had the Dark Winter bioterror war, lockdown with mandatory experimental vaccine that they practiced for. And they rolled that out last year. That was the other shoe that dropped, going to war against us. And this DHS bulletin, which came out on Friday after the show, says opposition to COVID mandates is a potential, quote, domestic terrorism threat. This is from Zero Hedge. The bulletin on Friday issued an almost unbelievable new, quote, unquote, terrorism alert contained in a so-called awareness bulletin. While it focused heavily on the threat posed by false narrative and conspiracy theories about the 2020 election, it also talked about violent extremists being anybody who has any concern about the pandemic that is being sold to us. So when you look at the potential terror threats, even above when it lists them, breaking out the NBC News broadcast, the first thing they mention is opposition to COVID measures. That's the very first thing. There it is, right there. Zoom in on that, Travis. The second thing is claims of election fraud and the belief that Trump can be reinstated. And the third one is a 9/11 anniversary and religious holidays. So those are the three things. Primarily, opposition to COVID measures. Number one, it describes that extremists, quote, may seek to exploit the emergence of COVID variants by viewing the potential reestablishment of public health restrictions across the U.S. as a rationale to conduct attacks. Now, we've had a flu that we're told was novel. The approach was what was novel. The idea that cheap, effective and safe medication would not only be withheld, but we would be lied to about that. And any doctors who actually wanted to practice medicine with the well-being of their patients foremost were punished. And so that was the landscape in which we've lived this last year. And now they're saying that if you push back against the ineffective mask mandates, against the ineffective vaccine mandates, because again, the vaccine does not prevent you from transmitting this. They admit that now. It's been admitted by Walensky. It's been admitted by the NHS in the UK. It's been admitted by the Oxford Vaccine Group, the people who created AstraZeneca. And what they want to do is they want to establish a passport, make living every aspect of our life a government-granted privilege. And then all they need to do is insert whatever requirements, constantly changing requirements, to live that life. That's why we must oppose this. That's why many people who wanted to take the vaccine, who believed in the vaccine, some of them are burning their vaccination passports because they said, this is tyranny. If you're going to make this a requirement for life, of course, that requirement is going to change arbitrarily by these medical dictators. The DHS document is heavily focused on the extremism of opposition to the COVID pandemic narrative. They said that, and focused on social media. Quote, these extremists may seek to exploit the emergence of variants by viewing the potential reestablishment of public health restrictions across the U.S. as a rationale to conduct attacks. So first they tell us it's novel. Then they tell us, well, our vaccines would have been 100% effective, but now we've got variants. We've got variants. And we'll always have another variant. And when I talked last week about Executive Order 83, I said there's nothing in there that is really of concern. But what is of concern to me, everybody is looking at, you got people saying, well, you know, it talks about doing this and doing that. It's not the specifics that you should be concerned with. It's the whole thing. The fact that he would issue an executive order when there is no reason to do it, when the number of cases have plunged down to essentially zero. And we're talking about I know we've got competing narratives here. People are saying, oh, look at Florida. It's just going through the roof. I don't believe what is being told us by statistics. You just have to take a look at what is happening. But either way, whether it is something that is ramping up or not, this is not an epidemic. Even if you take their worst case numbers, it is not an epidemic. It never has been. It never has affected that many people. You can take a look at what is happening in Australia. It is certainly not an epidemic there. But look at what has happened with martial law, and we're going to take a look at that in just a second. It's unbelievable what a night in Melbourne looks like. It's a 45-minute video. I cut it down to about 4 or 5 minutes. I want you to see this because it is absolutely insane. It is straight out of a dystopian nightmare to see empty streets filled with cops and masks, accosting any person who happens to walk out. This is the thing that has been instituted here. And the fact that you have the Tennessee governor putting out an executive order to waive all kinds of restrictions so that they can get students and retired doctors and doctors that's not in their specialty say, we're going to waive these restrictions, let these people work as healthcare workers. That is absolutely not necessary. It is unwarranted. And that is the thing that everybody should be concerned about. There's nothing specific in the document. And I've looked at that multiple times. I had somebody say they disagreed with me. Well, just read it for yourself. There's nothing in the details. But the concerning part is that he would feel compelled to do this because he's laying the foundation for what is coming. And when I analyzed that, I said, understand, this guy was very, the same governor, Lee, in Tennessee, was there a day before Trump in terms of saying, this is an emergency. We've got to do something about it. And so he is laying groundwork for another ramp up of these types of things. The public health safety measures, it says Homeland Security. Anybody concerned about that is a terrorist threat. Again, I showed you what NBC News had. Basically, what we're talking about here is that government criticism is a threat. Criticism of the government's actions, criticisms of the government's narrative, that is a threat to them because they are tyrants. Only tyrants are threatened when people criticize them. Only sham scientists are threatened by criticism and debate and skepticism. So if somebody can't handle debate as a scientist, that's the first clue that you can ignore them. And that's what we have. Those are the people who are running everything right now. And if you got a politician who does not want to allow criticism, that is a clear sign that they are a tyrant as well. That's why the First Amendment is first in our Constitution. So it is the hallmark of tyrants. It is a harbinger of things to come. The document also warns, and this is according to Reason Magazine. I mean, this is not, Reason Magazine has been full on with a pandemic. They absolutely believe it. They absolutely love the vaccine. They would like for everybody to take the vaccine. They pull back a little bit when it comes to vaccine passports. They realize the identification implications, the ID implications of that. But they're full on with all of the medical stuff. They just want it to be voluntary. So they're not pushing back against this because, like me, I believe that it is, the entire thing is a scam. That, you know, this is, there's no basis for any of this, no scientific basis for this. No, they're pushing back for the measures that are there. And so they're kind of taken back by the announcement by DHS. They said the document also warns that reopening schools and churches where people could gather is an opportunity for violence. So they don't want you talking to each other. We've had the clip. I showed you the clip of a small meeting in Canada. And they had people calling in. It was like a cable public access TV type of thing. Somebody called in and said, now, why can't we get together? What are your concerns? He goes, well, you know, we're a little bit concerned that if you get together, you might transmit it to each other. But we're not concerned about that as much as we are you transmitting misinformation to each other. We don't want you to get together and talk about the politics of this because that's what the real pandemic is. That's what the real deadly threat to us, the real cancer is the politics. That's why they're keeping us apart. And as Reason comments, I said, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. When your entire mission statement involves stopping terrorists, everything looks like an opportunity for terrorism. Well, it's not just terrorism. It's just use of force. The government is force. Like fire, it is a fearful servant and a dreadful master, said George Washington. And everything the government does is based on force. Not every problem can be solved by force. I have a lot of law enforcement officers who don't like the idea of the drug war, for example. Say, you know, this is not really a law enforcement issue, really, fundamentally. They understand that it is a spiritual issue or a medical issue or a psychological issue, however you want to define that. But it's not a law enforcement issue. And so if you're going to go around hammering everybody because you think they're nails, it doesn't work for that. Information liberation, Chris Minahan. Americans opposed to the CV lockdown measures are terrorists. NBC Nightly News, again, at the top of the list, opposition to COVID measures. It literally just lists every possible opponent of this regime and says that they're potential terrorists, which means that they can strip you of your rights with no due process. They can put you on a no-fly list. They can seize your bank account like they did Nick Fuentes. They can put you on a no-buy list. And again, what they're focusing on, this is the phrase from this document, the potential reestablishment of public health restrictions. This is a guarantee. This is coming this fall, when the weather changes. I've told you that for a long time. The Executive Order 83 by Bill Lee, governor of Tennessee, is another harbinger that this is coming. This is yet another harbinger, the fact that the DHS is saying it's, you know, potential reestablishment of this stuff. They're going to do it again. They're going to do it again. It's a light switch that they turn on and off. And then Chris Minahan has a couple of tweets, one from Kevin Drum, who says, quote, reactionary American whites, as always, won't give up their power unless it's taken from them. Mm-hmm. Writes for Mother Jones. Another one for This is Jennifer Rubin, who says in a Washington Post article, a more diverse, more inclusive society is what we need. This is fabulous news, talking about the decline in white population for the first time ever in the U.S. Now we need to prevent minority white rule. Does that sound familiar? Are we turning into South Africa? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. We have acquired the Department of Homeland Security's complete list. You know, we just saw a partial one that was put up there. But here's a full list. No pronouns in your biography. Married with kids, and you work a normal job. You didn't like the Captain Marvel movie. Yeah, these are the Babylon Bee. Hey, but this is what we're talking about. Another potential terrorist threat. Here's the rest of the list. Somebody doesn't like taxes. Somebody finds Kamala Harris slightly off-putting. Somebody who owns a Bible. Somebody who shops at Walmart. Somebody who watched YouTube anytime prior to 2015. Somebody who doesn't triple mask. And when you say, I hate Trump, they just laugh nervously and say, yeah, he's pretty crazy. Somebody who homeschooled. Somebody who doesn't swoon and scream with delight every time they hear the name Obama. So, yeah, this is the list. And while this is happening, we have the Army National Guard recruiting for internment and resettlement specialists. So, is this for people coming back from Afghanistan, or is this for people that they're getting ready to give us that kind of experiment, that experience that we've all been anticipating happening? The same type of thing that we saw in the green zone planning of last year. Perhaps that's what it is. We never got to those stages, but one country that did get to those stages, of course, is Australia. And I want to just show you a little bit of what this looks like. This is the dystopia that is in Australia. This guy's YouTube channel is Marty Focker, F-O-C-K-E-R. Here's what this looks like, though. He gets he's got one of these, I can tell from the video clips that he's got. He's got one of these 360 cameras, like a GoPro 360, and he's got a couple of cameras on him. And, of course, when you look at this, you'll see the people who are interrogating them every step of the way also have their cameras going. They've got like a little red circle, not quite like Iron Man, not as prominent as that, but it's there on their chest, recording. That's their body cam. But I want you to just see a couple minutes of this. It goes on. I'll tell you what happens in the overall thing. But I want you to look at this nightmare scenario. Empty streets except for an army, a literal army of masked cops asking for your identity papers, And as soon as you give it to one of them, another one engages you a couple of steps down and wants more information.
What's for?
Is there a reason wearing a mask today?
I've got an exemption.
You got an exemption?
Yep.
Is there a reason why you're not wearing a mask today?
We said that? Yeah, you're going to get it on you. What's that?
Do you have the exemption on you or?
I don't need an exemption. You know that. I don't have to provide an actual exemption. I just got to tell you and that's it. I got a medical exemption.
Yeah, and what's that for? You just have breathing problems while wearing the mask?
Yeah, I don't have to actually give you my medical history, but I do have an exemption for a valid medical reason.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I mean, obviously it is, you know, quite dangerous times right now with coronavirus around, and you know, I understand that, you know, you do need, if you have medical reasons for not wearing a mask.
Yeah.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, I've got a valid reason, so. Yeah, okay, no worries. Okay, thank you.
And what about, what are you doing out in the city tonight?
Just going for a walk, and we're exercising our rights, basically. Yeah. That's legal, isn't it?
That's the first two.
We're,
and they're
kind of
quasi-reasonable, but no, then it gets worse. Watch.
I still believe you are committing an offence, though,
okay,
under the Public Health and Wellbeing Act.
But I'm happy to provide my ID.
Yep, I appreciate
that. If you show me your authorised representative.
Okay. Well, I don't have the actual physical card on me at the moment,
okay,
but I still believe that you're committing an offence. If you fail, provide...
Sure. Okay, well, I'll tell you my name's...
Yep. ...have something with your name on it. I'm happy to show you my police ID again, so you've got my, all my details.
Yeah, I was just looking for the authorised officer ID,
yep,
but that's okay. I recognise you don't have that at the moment.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So what brings you into the city tonight, then?
I'm just walking.
Because you're outside of the 5K.
You hear the sound cutting off when they mention their name or their address or any personal data.
sir?
I'm from Melbourne.
Whereabouts in Melbourne?
Oh, well, I don't really have to provide that information just yet.
Well, at this stage, I do believe you're breaching the CHO directions, which constitutes an offence under the Public Health and Wellbeing Act.
But do you not have to be an authorised officer to enforce the CHO directives under the Public Health and Wellbeing Act?
Committing an offence, sir, under 458 of the Crimes Act, I do have an arrest power.
You have an arrest power.
I can provide some ID.
I can, but will you give me your name?
Yep, I'm more than happy to give you my ID.
Name, badge number on ID, and just write on there that you're an authorised officer?
Yep, I'm more than happy to do that for you.
Because in the Public Health and Wellbeing Act, it does actually clearly state you must provide that ID. And if you don't, you're impersonating an authorised officer.
I'm more than happy to provide that information.
Yeah, if you put that on a card.
I can put that on a card.
You write that on a card. So put your name and badge number on there and say that you're an authorised officer. And I'll give you my name.
You hear the constant helicopter flying over everybody?
But there's also other things at play here.
There is other things in play, but they haven't justified any of that.
It's a total police state. Look at all the cops. Just cops. Cops in masks. And these two brave people challenging them. If everybody would do what they're doing, they wouldn't have this situation.
Under the move-on order?
I'm not going to tell you to move
on. Under the summary offences? My date of birth? You don't actually need that. What for?
We need your ID, mate. That's part of your ID.
In Australia, there's maybe...
Don't give it to us, you'll be arrested.
Arrested for not giving...
We need to confirm who you are, mate. As simple as that. So, your date of birth, please.
Can I just ask what act that is?
I'm not going to explain it again.
Yeah.
Have you understood what I just said to you? You'll be arrested if you don't give us your ID.
I haven't got any idea. I mean, I've given you my name and address, and you can identify me from that. I can give you my date of birth, but it is insane.
I'm asking for your date of birth, please.
And can I please get your ID as well?
Well, it's right in front of you.
Yeah.
Clearly.
I'd like that in writing. You're asking for my ID. Yeah.
Can I have your date of birth, please?
Okay, under duress. Under duress? It is. Well, this is under massive duress with this tyranny. Like, you guys will know.
It wasn't that hard, was it?
It's not that hard, but...
Which act is that under?
And what was your year?
God, this is pretty crazy.
Is it? What's so crazy about it?
Your enforcement of tyranny.
Enforcement of tyranny, is it?
That's what it is. Yeah.
Look at this area here where they're walking. Nothing but cops everywhere. There's one or two individuals that they're
booking.
Just an army of cops. And here's one reporter. She wants to engage them.
From Daily Mail?
Yeah.
I'm here to actively protest for our basic rights.
Is it lockdown?
Lockdown, the entire tyranny of what the government's doing to us right now.
Do you believe in vaccination?
I believe in free choice in vaccination.
Okay.
So we should all have a free choice. There's no reason why we should be locked out of society by not taking a vaccine.
Yeah.
I think it's not really fair.
Okay. And what do you think about the Australian government's response in comparison to other countries?
Sorry?
What do you think about the strategy here, like the border closures?
It's pretty crazy. Like, we're destroying the state. We're destroying the country over the flu's disappeared.
Again, first question she asked him, do you believe in the vaccine? Do you believe in the vaccine as your Lord and Savior? Will you swear to uphold the vaccine and all the tenets of this new religion that's been imposed upon us? I mean, this is scientism. It is a religion. Do you believe in the vaccine? Well, I know it exists. I know there's a genetic code injection that does exist. I don't believe anything I'm told about this. As a matter of fact, when you look at what is happening in Australia, as I pointed out last week, you have Canberra, which has gone back into lockdown for a week based on one case. It didn't even say the person was in the hospital. Didn't say that they had symptoms. They had a case. The first case that they'd had since July of 2020. So 13 months ago, since they had their last case, they get one case and they locked everybody down. Now, you can't leave your house after 5 p.m. because, you know, it only travels by night, evidently. That's what we're looking at here. It's silly. None of this, I don't believe in what they say is science because I don't believe in quarantining people who are not sick. I don't believe in shutting down a city of 500,000 people because you tested one person for a flu virus that is easily treated with ivermectin, HCQ, and a number of other things that are not expensive. This is financially incentivized medical dictatorship. And here's the guy, Dictator Dan, they call him, Dan Andrews, of one of the Australian states, Victoria. He has been at the forefront of all this, but now they're extending it. You know, they practiced there in Victoria and in Melbourne, and now they're extending it to other cities, as I mentioned. You know, Sydney, Canberra, others are being locked down. Fines have increased to $3,700. Stay-at-home orders extended. It's absolutely insane what is happening, but this is the way Dictator Dan pushes back against criticism.
In any of the work that I do, I'm not here to do anything other than be frank. If there was another way, then we would choose that alternative. There isn't. We have to continue to be vigilant. And I know this is getting really hard. A pub crawl, an impromptu or pre-planned. Victoria Police are having a close look at that. For our health professionals, who'll have to care for people because of your selfish decisions. If we were to reopen and let people move freely right now, then we would finish up where Sydney's at. We got a lot of commentary from people last year. We got a lot of political attacks. We got a lot of people in different parts of the country lecturing Victorians and
poor thing.
And laughing at Victorians and enjoying
justifiably
our
so.
Difficulties a bit more than they probably should have. Let's not return that. Let's not do that. Not locked down like New South Wales are going to be for months and months and months. That maybe some people think these rules are optional. There's no hiding from this virus. There's no cheating your way around it. We're as strong as our weakest point when it comes to this virus, and that's why everyone needs to do the right thing. We got a lot of commentary from people last year. We got a lot of political attacks. We got a lot of people in different parts of the country lecturing Victorians. They've been given additional vaccines today. I know some Victorians will ask the question, well, why are they getting more vaccines than we are? Well, nothing else they're doing is working. Nothing else has worked. They've got to vaccinate their way out of this now. So that we can be open again and not be like, sadly, our friends in New South Wales who are locked in until they get 80% of people through the vaccination program. There'll be time to go on pub crawls. There'll be time to do all sorts of things we'd like to be doing. And that's when we get to 80% of the community vaccinated and not be like, sadly, our friends in New South Wales who are locked in until they get 80%.
So you understand, right? That's all I can take of that guy. You understand, and I'm sorry I don't have... I wrote down where we got that from. Of course, I did not prepare that. Somebody else prepared it. I don't want to take credit for it, but great job of putting that together. When you look at what they're saying here, when you look at what DHS is saying here in the United States, so you're a domestic terrorist if you want to go for a walk, like we just saw. You just want to go for a walk. You want to do a pub crawl. You want to walk. You want to go to school. You want to work. You want to travel. You're a terrorist. You're going to kill everybody. And so we're going to kill you first. We're going to kill the Constitution. We're going to kill our legal structure. We're going to kill due process. We're going to kill liberty. As I said on the one-year anniversary, I said, yeah, we've had a lot of things die this last year. I'm not so sure about the people they say died from COVID because you understand they didn't do tests on these people. They did not do autopsies on these people. And according to their rules, if anybody died within 30 days of getting a positive test somewhere, it was COVID. So that has been grossly overstated, but you cannot grossly overstate what it has done to our society, how we have, in the period of 1 year, as Trump presided over this insanity here in the United States, as he created the vaccines for the world, we have had the biggest erasure of civilization and the things that we've had ancestors fight against tyrants to establish. We have just allowed these things to be swept in without even questioning it. And the people who should be questioning this, the people who should be fighting injustice and tyranny, are the Christians, and they're being kept out of this fight by people who are lying to them about what legitimate authority is. You don't have to, when the government says jump, you don't have to ask them how high. That's not what we're told to do. We are told to oppose evil and injustice. And you better get started on it, because if you don't, your children are going to be slaves, and you'll probably be slaves too. This is not a Hezekiah moment where he's told, because of you showed these these Babylonians, you showed them all of your military things that you're so proud of, and you showed them all of your possessions that you're so proud of, they're going to come and take all this stuff. And they're going to take everybody in captivity. But it won't happen while you're king. Oh, good. Oh, okay. Well, that's a relief. It just happened to my children, right? Oh, this is moving fast enough, it's going to get you. So if you don't care about your kids, if you don't care about your country, if you don't care about the future for them, this is your future you're talking about. Your future. We're looking at something that is just a couple of years off. Now, none of us is guaranteed tomorrow, but you know, the chances of most people being alive, that are alive today, the chances of them being alive in 5 to 10 years are pretty great. And that's the time frame which this is all going to roll out. 1 in 16 UK businesses could close in the next quarter. These are people who have been able to hold out for a year and a half with these measures. And even they are now succumbing to this lockdown destruction, this planned, calculated, draconian, arbitrary, capricious destruction of the middle class. That's what we're talking about here. Politicians who claim to be serious about stopping COVID had better get serious about the border. Well, yes, I don't want to push fear-mongering on that, but it does show the hypocrisy, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Now, we're not going to have any travel domestically unless you're masked up and vaccinated and you do everything the government says. But hey, when it's somebody coming in illegally, we don't even test them. We don't vaccinate them. Instead, we spread them around, even though a large percentage of them are testing positive for this mysterious thing. And again, I'm not concerned about the virus. I'm concerned about the eradication of real medicine and of real science, because we have cheap, available drugs that can address and treat this. And the people who actually practice medicine, instead of practicing a kind of financial grifting in the name of medicine, if you don't grift with the big pharmaceutical companies and the government, you're shut down. If you simply want to heal people, you're shut down. We should be afraid of that. The Great Parental Revolt from Real Clear Politics. You can also find it on Zero Hedge. I guess that means that parents are now terrorists as well, right? An overreach in the classrooms by progressive school administrators, by nonprofits, and by the federal government has reached new heights, and parents are stepping up to fight back. And so this article from Real Clear Politics is mainly about critical race theory, the political Marxism that has been indoctrinating your kids for decades, folks. They're just now not trying to hide it anymore, not able to hide it because of the exposure, because of the pandemic. But now you've got a lot of different parental groups, and that's what this article is about. Here's some of them. Moms for Liberty, Informed Parents of California, Ed First, North Carolina, New Jersey Parental Rights, No Left Turn in Education, and Parents Against Critical Theory. Just a few of the hundreds of new parent groups that have emerged across the country in recent months. That's good. People are waking up. Now, let me tell you what you need to do. You get your kid out of the burning building, as Alex Newman, New American, said. You get your kid out of the burning building, and the next thing you do is you put out the fire. How do you put out the fire, the burning schoolhouse that is going to burn down the rest of your community if you don't stop it? You defund education. If you look at your taxes, if you look at your property taxes, some of the most taxes that you pay, and by the way, if you don't have a mortgage or a home, those taxes are still there on what you're renting. You just don't see it itemized. But it's a big part. And so when we look at our housing costs, and we look at the idea that you never truly own your home because you've always got property taxes, most of the property taxes go to support the schools. We need to understand that the schools are trying to burn down our society. And we need to understand that the school taxes are burning down our private lives and our budgets. And when we realize that we don't need any of that, that we don't want government in any way, shape, or form involved, we don't want money from government, we don't want vouchers, I don't need a voucher from them, I don't want to have some funding that has strings attached. Always had this argument with people in homeschooling when we were, you know, 20 years ago. Do not let them entice you with the promise of, oh, well, you can participate in sports, or you can do this or that, or I need some money from the state to help pay my books and so forth. No. You take that, they're going to own you. It's always about the money. It's the money. I talk about this all the time. That's how Trump locked us down and went to the war of middle class. Yeah, it's about the money. It's about the money. Don't let them take your freedom with money. You know, they consciously tell people, we're going to take your freedom in order to make you safer. And it's amazing to me that that's a bargain that most Americans are willing to take. But they're really willing to take it with money. And so do not give up your liberty for some couple of coins, 30 pieces of silver. The 11-minute takedown of a Putnam County, New York school board by Tatiana Ibrahim has well over 1 million views on YouTube. I imagine it'll be censored pretty soon, don't you think? And as we look at this, children born during the pandemic have lower IQs, says a U.S. study. They are not getting the kind of human interaction that they need. They're seeing people in masks all the time. Just think about this. They're not able to get out and play. They're under house arrest. Why would you expect anything else? They're experimenting on us, say some black New Yorkers in New York City. They don't trust the vaccine. Well, nobody should trust this vaccine, black or white. I'm supposed to worry, one person, Jason Clemens, 41, at a construction site. He's a safety manager from Queens. So he's working in something that's got risk. He's got more risk in his construction job, and I think he knows it because he's a safety manager. But listen to what he has to say. I'm supposed to worry about getting sick when I go outside versus getting killed by a cop or something like that? That's why I spent some time on Friday talking about violence versus virus. How do you want to die? Do you realize what your risks are from violence or from virus in a big city? Yeah, you know, you're more likely to get sick in a big city. You're also more likely to get shot or by gangs, not just by cops. I mean, that's there's more gang violence that's gang-on-gang violence than just gangs shooting up an area at random or hitting innocent bystanders. That is far more prevalent than getting killed by a cop or something like that. So when we look at what is happening in Chicago, New York, I talked about that many different places, Milwaukee, New Orleans. I said, look at the number of people who are dying for real. Okay, we're not, there's no question when somebody gets shot. There is a question whether somebody has COVID because of the tests and because of the clinical diagnoses that they've used in the past, these tests that they say don't work. So, but you know if you've been shot. When we look at this and we look at that, the risk of violence versus the virus in a big city, as Thomas Jefferson said, cities are a threat to the health, the wealth, and the liberty of mankind. And yeah, there is a health threat in a city. But it's also the violence, and it's also the threat to your liberty. So one individual, as many black New Yorkers, said the Johnson & Johnson suspension left them more anxious than that the vaccines were unsafe, insufficiently tested, steered to black neighborhoods because they were going door-to-door with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. It reaffirmed my hesitance. It reaffirmed everything, said Ms. Shavuo Goodwin, a graduate student and clinic manager. It just shows black lives don't matter. You can test that on us just like you tested syphilis on us. Well, they see us all as guinea pigs. As a matter of fact, they see us all as their livestock, their cattle. I tweeted out, and it's still up. I'm surprised some of the things I tweet out that have not been taken down. But I said, if you have an employer who demands as a condition of your job that you get vaccinated, then don't be surprised when that employer who has such a low esteem of you as a fellow human being created in the image of God, that that employer then summarily fires you the next week. Because that's what that type of employer will do. If you're going to take a vaccine because you don't want to lose your job, understand that that employer is likely just to summarily fire you for no reason whatsoever. School board meeting on masks erupts into laughter at the mention of a particular person. I want you to hear this.
Active in fighting COVID under rules established by health experts. One would have to dismiss the views of highly educated and experienced scientists, people like Dr. Anthony Fauci or Dr.
Isn't that become a punchline? Don't laugh.
Excuse me.
Don't laugh.
Again.
Yeah. I'm, you know, gavels that to order. Do not laugh at His Highness here. I think he is. You know, he is the emperor. I think we ought to give him a title. Let's call him Lord Ha Ha. Remember, that was the name that they gave to a propagandist for the Germans at the beginning of World War II. It was a British guy who was a propagandist. They called him Lord Ha-Ha. I think we need to call Fauci Lord Ha-Ha. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, and again, you can find us at APS Radio, live broadcast. You just click on the upper right, you'll get to the news section. And I also want to thank the people at aftermath.fm. They also carry this show live, and they have a special app. You can listen to it for free, as well as they have a membership where you can get to a lot of archived information from Clyde Lewis and archived programs. Of mine as well. It's good to have stuff archived somewhere other than one of these platforms that you never know exactly what's going to happen with them or who's going to buy them, right? Google, when they bought YouTube used to be a free speech platform. They transitioned it into something that was very lucrative to them financially. And we're going to talk about what's happening with the various platforms, Rumble, Odyssey, and so forth, coming up here as well. But again, if you want to watch the broadcast live, we have Trovo and DLive. And also, you know, they stopped Periscope as an app, but since I still have, for the time being anyway, Twitter. And this is why it's very important. You know, Twitter was probably, I guess, my best lifeline when I got fired to the public. It was before I really had done anything with Gab, and it was before Twitter had done the big purge. And so when I told people on Twitter, it's basically just the Twitter people who realized that I was fired, because Alex pretty quickly started erasing things. And it's all gone now. So thank you. I appreciate Alex. Thank you for separating me completely from InfoWars. That's a real blessing. as much as I hate to see my work flush down the memory hole. I'm glad that it's gone from InfoWars. So thank you for taking me off of Bandop Video. Good job. But, you know, a lot of people still think that that I'm there. So that's why it's important for you to take a look at thedavidknightshow.com. Right now I'm on Twitter, so they got a lot of attention there. And then when they started purging people on Twitter, I went back and kind of reactivated my account on Gab. And if you recall, around Christmas time, as they were purging everybody off of Twitter, lost about 30,000 people there off of my followers, off of my account there. When I got over to Gab, I couldn't even do anything for several months. I don't think anybody could. You just watch the number of followers going up. And I don't know, you know, when people follow you, if they actually look and see what you've got there or not. But it got up to about, I don't know, 345,000, something like that, followers. So when they shut things down in one area, they pop up in another. But again, the way to stay connected to us is at thedavidknightshow.com. It's just a website right now that just has links to where you can find us. But we do appreciate everybody who is listening and sharing the broadcast, because that is very important. And I thank you for your support. I've got another email here from Richard. He says, well, we won this battle. He says, fake Republican Greg Abbott came out and tweeted that he would support us about 6 hours after we started laying into them with all that we had. And this is about the mask mandates by the schools up in Fort Worth. And I mentioned that last week. I think it was Thursday or Friday's show. I talked about that. And so they pushed back. And he says, we ended up winning a temporary restraining order guaranteed by the court. It was going to fall one way or the other, because day one, he had a whole group of staff that refused to comply, even in meetings with senior administration. So thank God, one small win for we the people in a long war with no end in sight. He says, thank you for encouraging civil disobedience. It is working. I think that's very important. We have to understand that it will work. Just take a look at Boris Johnson in the UK. When you had between 500,000 and 1 million people fill the streets of London, this guy who was pushing everything very rapidly in the direction of Australia pulled back and said, oh, we'll have a Freedom Day coming up in a couple of weeks. How about that? And then on Freedom Day, he listed a bunch of more coming restrictions. So time to get out on the streets again, people in the UK. Man-made climate change. This is coming from Scott. 2,056 nukes exploded versus my hibachi grill. That's right. All the different nuclear, above-ground nuclear tests that have happened. He says over the last 80 years. It couldn't be that has anything to do with global warming, if we have global warming. No, it can't be the nuclear meltdowns like we had at Fukushima. It can't be all the satellites in the sky, or the 5G or the cloud seeding. It can't be DARPA. Can't be HARPA weather modification lasers. It can't be private jets, I'll add. He didn't say that. No, it's my hibachi grill in my truck. Therefore, I have to be punished and controlled. And by the way, it's not just your grill. It's the meat that you're grilling on your grill. Yeah. So, again, just to reiterate, on Friday, we had the U.S. warning that the 9/11 anniversary could inspire extremist attacks. You know, the extremists are those of us who are not buying the COVID measures. Those of us who, in anticipation, you know, what they're doing is they're saying, we're going to reestablish these lockdowns and we're going to make them worse. And so get ready, because these people about had it. That's what that message is really about. It's not about, don't get into this and say, well, this is, look at how bad Biden is. He's coming after everybody that doesn't like his politics. No, no, no. Trump was in on this as well. And so these people realize that, you know, they've got this tag team match between Trump and Biden. They have the pandemic that they switch off. They switch it back on. Oh, now we got a variant and so forth. And now, look, I've got some new numbers. And they don't even bother to show you any cooked data anymore. They just make a pronouncement. And so they understand that we've had it with this. They understand that we know the emperor has no clothes, no science, no data. And so that's what they're talking about now. And they're saying, well, it's okay coming around. Maybe around 9/11, the anniversary. So this is the government's conspiracy theory. You know, the government doesn't even do good conspiracy theories. If you're going to do a conspiracy theory, it shouldn't have such ridiculous narrative as part of it. But, you know, when the Pentagon needs a new war, maybe you will have an attack. Maybe if the FBI needs to look like heroes, maybe you will have a new attack. That's really what drives these situations. So I said, fueled by factors of resentment, restrictions imposed by the pandemic. That's right. If you go to work, if you go to church, go to school, you are an extremist radical. I just want to remind you, and it was a few years ago, it was back in 2013, I talked to a guy in the UK. His dad was a law enforcement officer there. And he knew a lot of cops. He knew a lot of judges and other people like that. And his name was Tony Rook. And so we did a couple of interviews with him. I did. And it was Rook and Knight. How about that for 4D chess? Tony Rook put together, did a couple of things. He had a website called Killing Anti, because Anti is a BBC. That's a nickname for the BBC. And he refused to pay his BBC tax for his television because he said that the BBC was complicit in 9/11. He said that because we had the BBC reporter, as you've all seen, giving the report that a third building, Building 7, had collapsed in its own footprints and did that 20 minutes before the building collapsed. And awkwardly, as this person was giving the report that the building had collapsed, you could see the building over the reporter's shoulder. Which, as Tony Rook correctly pointed out, that means that the BBC had foreknowledge that it was going to be pulled down. And that's what Silverman, the guy that owned the building, said. He said, pull it. It's a term used for demolition. It looks like demolition. It sounds like demolition. It smells like demolition. I think it's demolition. It was never hit by a plane. And the BBC said it fell 20 minutes before dead. You can see it over the shoulder. So Tony Rook refused to pay his TV license because he said the BBC intentionally misrepresented facts about the 9/11 attack. And so he took them to court. And the court said, the judge said, when he heard all the evidence, he said, yeah, you don't have to pay that tax. Which is tantamount to admitting that the BBC was complicit. So, Rook said the BBC had to have prior knowledge to a terror attack, making them complicit in the attack. He presented the BBC footage to the judge, along with a slew of other evidence, and the judge agreed that he had a reasonable case. He said, yeah, you're right, you don't have to pay the licensing fee. So for all intents and purposes, that judge at that court said, yeah, they did know in advance, obviously. Which then begs the question, who was it that told the BBC that it was going to come down in 20 minutes? Well, that would likely be the people who pulled it down 20 minutes later. So who would that be? Who would it be that demolished a building because it takes more than 20 minutes, takes more than a few hours to set up a building to be demolished, doesn't it? So who was it that did that? Who was it that planned this thing out long in advance? Was that also the Taliban? Did the Taliban, did Al-Qaeda tell the BBC that that third building was going to fall down? So, he also did a movie, a documentary. It was called Incontrovertible. And what Tony Rook did was he got a lot of law enforcement officers and judges. I think he even had some firemen. And he put together a jury. And he made his case about the prior knowledge of the government there at Building 7. There it is, going down in controlled demolition. He made that case to the... So what he did is he filmed it live. They had a trial. He put the evidence that 9/11 was a false flag before these retired law enforcement officers, retired judges, and they all agreed that that's exactly what it was. As a matter of fact, he also did some documentaries with some UK firemen. One of them said, if this was a situation where you had a steel skyscraper, not a concrete skyscraper, but a steel skyscraper, you have a steel skyscraper that just collapses, why haven't we had any change in the building code requirements? Why haven't we had any changes in the way that we fight fires? Wouldn't you expect, I would expect as a fireman, hey, we learned something new. We'd never seen this before, but, this happened with three buildings in just a couple of hours, and only two of them were hit by planes, so maybe we need to change the way we fight fires. None of that ever happened. None of that. Speaking of false flags, We had a LGBTQ pride flag stolen and replaced by a Confederate flag. There you go. So we already have a false flag attack happening here. And the LGBT flag, speaking of false flags, it was flying in front of a religious center at Virginia Tech. At Virginia Tech. How about that? So you have this religious center flying an LGBT flag. Do you think that maybe they see LGBT as a religion, as I do? Yeah, we got a lot of things, you know, that people worship and idolatry, don't we? We've got a lot of false idols. Our hearts are idol factories. They're constantly making idols out of vaccines, out of political figures, out of Marxism and economic. I mean, we make make anything into an idol. But we can also go a little bit further. We've got some very well-developed religions now that have come out around critical race theory, Marxism, intersectionality, and the LGBT. There are some pushbacks in some places, but in other places, they're having their way. For example, in Scotland, you have a transgender madness in Scotland, writes New American. This is a headline, New American. Kids as young as 4 can, quote, change their gender, unquote, without the schools notifying parents. As a matter of fact, schools, documents have come out, so the schools are saying, make sure you don't tell the parents. And, you know, it's kind of hard for the parents to tell because a lot of these boys are wearing kilts, so how do you know when they, they make that transition in Scotland? Supporting transgender pupils in schools, a 70-page report. As New American points out, it regurgitates the usual transgender propaganda about gender neutrality and transphobic bullying, saying, quote, young people can simply choose to tell others informally that they want to use a different name. They don't have to change it in the school records, and you don't want to tell the parents. Quote, a transgender young person may not have told their family about their gender identity. Inadvertent disclosure could cause needless stress for the young person or could put them at risk and breach legal requirements. And then at the same time, they're actively grooming these kids for that in kindergarten. Here's an example, a book called Red, A Crayon's Story. This is how early they're getting the kids. 4 years old in Scotland. It tells a story about a blue crayon that suffers an identity crisis because it was mistakenly labeled as red. And you have another one of the books that they push to people, another primary age narrator, says that she has, quote, a girl brain, but a boy body, claims that she knew that she was transgender as a toddler. The character claims, quote, pretending I was a boy felt like telling a lie until an amazing day when he, she, or it went to a doctor who diagnosed transgender mental illness. Yes. Gender reassignment surgery, however, in Texas has now been labeled child abuse by the Department of Family and Protective Services. This is the first time I've ever seen anything useful coming out of CPS. But this is good. This is good. Because it is. You know, to mutilate a child at a very young age, it just is beyond me how that could be accepted. As it is criminal abuse. It is child abuse. They don't have the judgment to do that. That's why you have parents. And unfortunately, we have some parents, like James Younger's mother, who want to do that type of thing to their children. But that is the exception to the rule. For the most part, it's people in these institutions who do not have the child's interest at heart. But again, you have to get parents' permission for a field trip. But hey, if it's an abortion or if it's genital surgery that's not reversible, we will make an exception for that. Failure to report abuse is a misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in jail, a $4,000 fine, or both. And we have a federal court has now permanently enjoined the Biden administration's transgender mandate. This is a federal court, although it is in Texas, Northern District of Texas, the U.S. District Court for the Northern District. Judge Reed O'Connor has blocked a Biden administration policy requiring doctors to perform transgender procedures and abortions regardless of any religious or conscientious objections. And this is connected with Obamacare. And so that was struck down by the Department of Health and Human Services under the Trump administration. Now the Biden administration has reinstated that policy, and the litigious lawyer that Biden has put in place and as head of HHS, Javier Becerra from California, the former attorney general there, who came after David DeLeiden, Center for Medical Progress, who exposed the trafficking in body parts, the murder for hire, these people being hired by research institutes, including the NIH, Fauci's NIH, and the FDA. They were murdering children to provide fresh, not frozen body parts. And Javier Becerra, instead of stopping that, decided to go after the whistleblower. And so now Javier Becerra sued to compel doctors to perform abortions and transgender procedures, even if they had moral and ethical objections to that. So the judge held that the transgender mandate violates the Religious Freedom Restoration Act by placing, quote, substantial pressure on the plaintiffs to violate their religious beliefs. Now, this is a case, and I mentioned this, because this has implications for religious objections to vaccine mandates as well. This is yet another thing that we can look at in terms of making a legal case. Not to say that we're going to have honest courts anywhere. It's a very rare court where you're going to have people decide things on a without adjusting the law to suit their biases. But the judge said no party disputes that the mandate threatens to burden Christian plaintiffs' religious exercise by placing substantial pressure on Christian plaintiffs in the form of fines and civil liability to perform and provide insurance coverage for a gender transition procedure and abortions. When RFRA, that is the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, when the RFRA violation is clear and the threat of irreparable harm is present, a permanent injunction exempting Christian plaintiffs from that religion-burdening conduct is the appropriate relief. Again, I think this has precedence for vaccine mandates as well. We'll see. I mean, certainly it should apply, but again, it's up to the arbitrary whims, the capricious enforcement of the law and the Constitution that we have now seen commonplace among judges. Just one in five marriages in the UK were religious, only 20%. And as a matter of fact, that comes at a time when back in 2018, I guess I haven't done any statistics since then, a quarter of all pregnancies in England and Wales ended in abortion. They point out that going back to 1900, religious weddings, ceremonies, accounted for 85% of all marriages. By 1980, it had fallen to just over 50%, 50.4%. And 2017 saw for the first time people expressing no faith in the UK was more than half of the population. So when more than half of the people are atheists, you wouldn't expect to have that many religious weddings, would you? And yet, it's even worse than that, because the Methodist Church, for example, ordained its first transgender vicar in 2017 in a vote 254-46. They vote on these things. Then I was like, what does the Bible say? As Christians, you would kind of think that would be the thing. No. We're going to vote. They said, quote, it consents in principle to the marriage of same-sex couples on Methodist premises by Methodist ministers. Last month, the Church of England had its first ever trans woman vicar claim that God is non-binary. And I don't think that individual says God is Trinitarian. I don't think that's what they meant by that. This is the insanity. This is why these types of things are happening around the world right now, and Western civilization is, the wheels are coming off. Because we threw God out of the car a long time ago. Some kids don't want to return to in-person schooling. This is from CNN. Listen to this. CNN singing the praises of school at home. Not going all the way to homeschooling. But talking about how, first they start with a young black high school senior, Talia Rice. She returns next week for her final year of high school in suburban Chicago. But she says she doesn't really want to go back to in-person learning. She says it doesn't have anything to do with coronavirus fears or even first-day jitters. Instead, she doesn't like the social pressures. She says, I haven't had to deal with that in more than a year. Virtual learning, she said, helped her to thrive in class and engage more with her studies than she was able to do in person. She said, with online classes, you don't have to worry about trying to fit in, who will talk to you in the hallways and so forth. You know, we were always told that was the big objection, that everybody, socialization. It's like our kids got plenty of socialization. Too much, as a matter of fact, probably. But, you know, this type of socialization that they're talking about in the schools is the kind of socialization you see in Lord of the Flies. Have you ever seen that film or read that book? That's the kind of socialization you're getting in the schools. Then they talk to Shun Jester, 10 years old, a fifth grader, who was saying the same thing. He said at their school in the Atlanta area, again, this is CNN. He says, I picked virtual school because I got a choice between in-person and virtual. So I picked virtual because I get to spend more time with my family. And I get to see them all the time. There you go. Yeah, that's the thing. CNN says, there's no one right way of learning for every child. Imagine that. Now, what an indictment that is of our institutional schooling system, isn't it? It's a factory system. One size fits all. I mentioned the cartoon. Used to see where they'd have everybody dressed in a basketball uniform, and it was one size uniform. You try to fit it on all these different size kids, all different ages and so forth. Some experts, saying CNN, have worried that prolonged online learning can be isolating for kids, but research shows that virtual learning can be as good as classroom learning if done right. They said there is no one right way for everyone, and families must pick what works best for them and their children. Well, see, now you can do that. It's called homeschooling. Because you just, once you get to that point, you just get to the point and say, well, I'm going to decide what the curriculum is going to be. What curriculum is going to be right for our family, for my children? And you got everything from unschooling all the way into classical conversations, very rigorous academic stuff. We were the other side of the spectrum. We were the unschooling people. We kept it kind of loose and improvised. But you can get very detailed about it as well. So you can do everything in between, and of course you can get together, you can have socialism. You can have socialism at school, you can have socialization, and you can have co-op services where you have parents take different subjects and kind of do it cooperatively like that. And that, more than anything, that gives the kids a chance to have some social interaction and to enlarge their sphere of friends as well. When you look at Snopes has had a bad weekend, I'm sorry to say. Well, actually, I'm not sorry to say that. A little bit of schadenfreude. Fact checkers. The fake fact checkers, says the headline at Breitbart. The fake fact checkers at Snopes play dumb after they get busted for plagiarism. There you go. It was BuzzFeed. You're really at the... Talk about intersectionality in journalism. I mean, you're down at the very bottom when you're being exposed by BuzzFeed, of all people. So they said that between 2015 and 2019, BuzzFeed found that Snopes published dozens of articles containing material plagiarized from news outlets such as The Guardian and The LA Times. A Snopes internal investigation, motivated by the BuzzFeed bust, uncovered 54 plagiarized articles. And guess who the plagiarizer in chief is over at Snopes? Yes, it is the co-founder, CEO David Mickelson, who has had some other interesting revelations about his own personal sexual practices and other things like that. He and the cat lady have split up, but he was there and he was telling the reporters there how to do this. And they actually had the messages where he said, all right, just go to these sites. If you like the article, just put it up verbatim. And we can go back and change things here and there a little bit to get rid of the plagiarism. You know, so he would deplagiarize it after the fact. Rand Paul, after his second YouTube purge, Breitbart says, no, Rand Paul, YouTube should not have the quote-unquote right to censor you. And I'm glad they got that right. As a matter of fact, it was Alim Bokhari who did that. And he understands. As a matter of fact, he was the one who first brought to my attention the 1946 case, Marsh versus Alabama. You had a person and who was handing out religious tracts in the public square. I think it was Seventh-day Adventist, I think. And I think it was a woman. And this was a company-owned coal town. They owned the public square. It was privately owned. And they said, you can't do that here. But since it was the public square, all right, it's not a shopping mall. It's not retail space in a shopping mall because all the space in a shopping mall is retail, right? So we've had subsequent court cases where people said, well, yeah, you know, in California, the shopping mall kicked people out. And the court said, yeah, they can do that. That's different. That's a retail space. This was the public square in a privately owned town. And that's what the internet is. And that's what all these people, whether it is Twitter and Facebook or whether it's YouTube, their business model is a digital public square. And Jack Dorsey has said that 8 times under oath. As a matter of fact, in one hearing under oath, he said it 5 times. Our business model is the digital public square. That's why they were given Section 230 protection, saying that they're not publishers. They're just providing a digital public square. So they will not be held liable for any content that's up there. Now, we all know that the governments are pressuring them behind the scenes, telling them who to censor, demanding that they do it quickly. And in a lot of cases in these hearings, you have people like Marco Rubio publicly threatening them and demanding that they censor who they say to censor. So we know that's just a beard. But in theory, the Section 230 should protect them from any lawsuits or any actions from the government, any lawsuits from individuals or actions from the government, because they just leave the stuff up. If they just left it up, that'd be fine. But that's not the way 230 is being used. But Alim Bokhari understood that with Marsh versus Alabama, it's the public square. Now, what Rand Paul is doing, and Breitbart is taking him to task, they say, well, he's been heroic on several issues. And again, I'm not, every time I criticize somebody, like I criticized Todd Friel because of his take on, where the lines of authority are drawn for Christians, I'm not saying he's a horrible guy. I don't want that to be perceived as a personal attack. I got kind of peeved about the fact that he was dancing around the issue for a very, very long time before he'd finally make some kind of a commitment. The fact that he was afraid to say vaccine on YouTube. He'd call it the V word. If you're afraid to take on these issues, then maybe just don't talk about it at all. If you don't want to research the issue, maybe don't talk about it at all. But I don't think we need to be afraid of addressing the critical issues facing us right now. And this is the critical issue. This is a critical issue for Christians, for non-Christians alike. It is an ethical and it is a moral issue as well. And the Bible has something to say about that. We should not avoid these issues. Just understand that if you say what YouTube does not want you to say, they'll kick you off. But you can't appease them. Because first it'll be this critical issue, and then it'll be another critical issue after that, and another critical issue after that, and it never ends. Well, I've been kicked off 7 times because I'm not going to play that game. But again, I think he's done a lot of positive things. I think Rand Paul has done a lot of positive things. Breitbart mentions some of the things that Rand Paul has been against the lockdown hysteria. He's consistently opposed the growth of the surveillance state. He refuses to play along with the grotesque spending bills. I don't know how much he pushed back on it when it was Trump that was pushing it last year. But anyway, we'll give him that. And then there's foreign policy, where Paul was America first before Donald Trump was even a candidate. Absolutely correct. In 2013, he filibustered John Brennan's appointment to the CIA. So there's much to applaud Rand Paul about, much to applaud Ron DeSantis about. And again, let's get rid of this idea. You know, we all want to have somebody who is completely pure and right about every issue. That person does not exist. The person doesn't exist. And so when you create somebody like, when you imagine somebody to be that way out of your own imagination, you're going to be disappointed. I'm not like that. I'm not right about everything. I think I'm right about everything. I mean, I may be wrong about something, but I'm not going to be dishonest about something. But you can still be wrong about it. And so, don't make demigods out of anybody. But so there is one glaring issue that his libertarianism, as we know it, and of course it is a hallmark of the libertarians. We've seen it by the Cato Institute. We've seen it by Reason saying that corporations are able to do whatever they wish. They're corporations. They can do whatever they want. But let me just say this to Breitbart. This is not just a problem with Reason magazine and with the Cato Institute, who are libertarian. It's also a problem for the biggest conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation. Both the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute were at that little garden party that Trump did to tell everybody how much he loved free speech when he would do nothing at all to defend it. And these libertarian and conservative think tanks would say, no, corporations should be able to do whatever they want. Corporate authoritarianism, writes Bukhari. Paul said, as a libertarian-leaning senator, I think private companies have the right to ban me if they want to. So in this case, I'll just channel that frustration into ensuring that the public knows YouTube is acting as an arm of the government and censoring their users for contradicting the government. Do you see what's happening here? First of all, corporations don't have rights. They don't have rights. What are rights? We have rights as individuals because we're created in the image of God, according to the Declaration of Independence. So individuals have rights. When you talk about states' rights, the Constitution doesn't mention that. It talks about the powers. States have powers. Individuals have rights. We, the people, have rights, but we don't have those rights collectively. We possess those rights as individuals because as soon as you say, well, there is a collective public health, then what you start doing is you start attacking the individual's health. You subordinate the individual to the herd, to the public, to the village. So these things are not collective. A corporation is collective. A corporation is not a creature of God. A corporation is a creature of government. And as such, it needs to be regulated by government to protect our individual rights as human beings created in the image of God. And when we look at what else he had to say. He said, look, YouTube is just acting as an arm of the government, and they're censoring the users for contradicting the government. In other words, they're doing what the government is telling them. They're a government agent. How can he say they've got rights if they're acting as a government agent for censorship? This is nothing more than a beard. I've talked about this for years, even before we got kicked off back in August 6th of 2018. I was talking about it because prior to that, we had shadow banning, and we had all these other things. And, you do not have, the corporations do not have the right to censor people. And I said for the longest time, what this is the iron fist of censorship from the government. They put a velvet glove on it and pretend that it's not the government's hand. And, oh, look, it's not hard. It's nice and soft. It's not even really a soft tyranny anymore, though. That velvet glove is kind of hardened, and it's they've hit people with it so many times that the velvet glove is got a lot of holes in it. And you can see that metal fist of the government right through those holes, can't you? Pretty apparent to everybody now. Should be. So why is he defending this? As he points out, a constitutional right, says Bukhari, No, not if they're classified as common carriers or as places of public accommodation, as Clarence Thomas has suggested, and as other states like Florida and Texas plan to do. So it's not a constitutional right. They are places of public accommodation. And whether we're if we accept this, you know, we've had, and I've seen this for a long time, as I point out, going back 30, 35 years ago, we had the idea that a private organization that was created by the Republicans and Democrats to control who gets into debates, these private debate commissions. Oh, they're private corporations. They can censor whoever they wish. So they censor the third candidate on the ballot and maybe the fourth candidate, right, who went through a lot of extra hurdles to get onto the ballot that the Republicans and Democrats didn't have to do. But they can censor them because they're a private organization. So this is a game they've been playing for a long time. They can censor people because they're a private organization, really? Well, no. In the same way, as I've said for the longest time, if you allow this to happen, then you can have the the whole civil rights thing where you say, well, you're not going to deny people access to public accommodations based on their skin color or based on health conditions. You know, that's what the whole Americans with Disabilities Act was about. We've had this conversation before in America, and now the very people who were supporting the ADA, supporting the Civil Rights Act and so forth, they're now demanding that we segregate people based on their health choices, not getting a vaccine. And that's going to be the next area, because in between, we've had the removal of people based on off of cyberspace because of their political beliefs. You know, we're not going to have a discussion. So if you allow that to be done by corporations, if you allow the censorship to be done by corporations, then, of course, that's why you had the New England Journal of Medicine last March saying, we're not going to do this by a law from the federal government. We're going to do this by coercion through corporations because that's the way they prefer to work. They love to have giant corporations. That's why Trump eradicated the middle class last year, Main Street, because the globalists want to have big corporations. They only want to have a couple of people that they have to control. It's impossible for them to control hundreds of thousands of small businesses or millions of small businesses, but they can control two or three giant corporations very easily. They can make a deal with them. They can accommodate them. They can hand out favors. They can get them to do whatever they want. So they want speech and the press and the entertainment and the retail. They all want that to be controlled, and transportation. They want that to be controlled by two or three companies at most. And we want that to be done by multinational corporations so we can have global governance. Two or three multinational corporations to control every segment, whether it's food or transportation or information, controlled by these corporations. Central global government wants centralized command by corporations, global corporations. Is it a natural right, says Bakari? Well, I don't think protecting a $1.8 trillion behemoth's freedom to delete your videos from the internet is what the founders or God had in mind for natural rights. And again, these are not legal. These are legal entities. They're not God's creatures, so they don't have natural rights. They have the rights that are given to them by the government that creates them. And then the government uses them as an agent, as a tool, to do things that the government is expressly prohibited from doing. It's just a prevarication. It's just a dodge. It's just a beard. Because of Section 230, Wikipedia faces no consequences when its articles defame conservatives as neo-Nazis and white supremacists, and Google faces no consequences when it puts those articles at the top of its search results and purges other people, like yours truly. Google and Wikipedia have more power than anybody else to defame. And so newspapers will be subject to defamation laws, but not Google and Wikipedia. Because, see, they have been given this type of immunity, just like the pharmaceutical companies have been given immunity. It's kind of a sovereign immunity because they're acting as sovereigns. They're acting in concert with the government. So they removed a second video from Rand Paul, This was, he said, left-wing cretins at YouTube banned me for 7 days for a video that quotes two peer-reviewed articles saying cloth masks don't work. So he gets a seven-day suspension. I've been through this seven times, so I know how this works. Well, the first time they just deleted years' worth of work without any explanation or any warning or any strikes. But since then, they did give me a form letter that's sent to me about every 15 minutes for a couple of months. I got over 8,000 of them. the process is the first time they take down one of your videos, they don't put any restrictions. But then, so they give you one. So it's actually four strikes and you're out. So the first one, they take it down. The second one, they take it down and they give you a strike and you can't post anything for 7 days. Then when they take down the second video, you're locked out, and I forget what it was. It was like a month or two. And when you get your third strike, that's when they pull the channel. So the other one that they took was an interview that he did with Newsmax. He said, this resulted in a first strike on the channel, which means that it can't upload content for a week per our longstanding three strikes policy, said YouTube. Again, they had a warning, and now this is his first strike. So he gets one more. That'll lock up his channel for a long period of time. The third one will take it down forever. He said, I think this kind of censorship is dangerous, incredibly anti-free speech, and truly anti-progress of science, which involves skepticism and argumentation to arrive at the truth. But again, you know, even though this is totally evil, Rand Paul won't oppose it. See, this is how these things work. Rumble, meanwhile, it was kind of interesting. I first saw the Odyssey tweet, and there was a tweet that was put out by Odyssey, another video site. And we're on both of these, by the way. The Rumble, I still don't have my name on that account. So that's Roundtable Report at Rumble. The David Knight Show at Rumble is being held by Alex. He won't release my name there. We've been through this a lot of different ones, and I never really pushed it on Rumble because we don't have that big a footprint there. But Rumble made some moves to pay creators, they say, who challenge the status quo. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to get some big-name controversial figures, people like Glenn Greenwald, Tulsi Gabbard, people like Sean Hannity, and get them to move to Rumble instead of YouTube, where they can talk about politics and maybe even about the pandemic. They're saying they won't purge stuff about the pandemic. So I first saw this as a tweet from Odyssey, and it was really kind of strange. They said, we don't want on our platform, we don't want the next Sean Hannity. We want the next PewDiePie. I thought, so why are they telling me? They don't want people who talk about politics on Odyssey? That's really strange. I didn't understand the context. It's in this context that they're talking about that. But I retweeted that and I replied, well, I don't want to be either Sean Hannity or PewDiePie. I just want to be able to speak freely and be left alone. Is that your platform? Are you going to support that? And I think they will. I mean, I've got a lot more views on Odyssey than I do on Rumble. And that channel has grown, I think, partly because we're able to get stuff up faster there. All the different channels have different speeds at which you can upload stuff to them, and very, very different speeds at which they process it. So it takes them quite a while to process it at other sites. Odyssey is the fastest, so we can pretty much get all of our videos up there. And if you want the link to the Odyssey channel that we have, or the Rumble channel, or the YouTube, or the BitChute channels, you'll find those at thedavidknightshow.com. But they brought in Tulsi Gabbard, Glenn Greenwald. They're going to give them money to put content up, and they require that people put it up there for a two-hour exclusive window, and then they'll let them run video ads on it and other monetization features. So it's not something necessarily we're going to pursue. I'm not interested in trying to give a monopoly to Rumble. It's just going to be whoever's there. And quite frankly, I'm a little bit concerned about Rumble because of their political connections and because they say that they ban racism and hate speech. I'm not a racist. I'm not guilty of hate speech. I say things that people hate to hear. But, you know, we've seen that label applied to anybody. So if you say that you're going to ban racism and hate speech, that doesn't go anywhere in my book. I mean, you know, you're going to be, that means that they're going to have to judge what is hateful and what is racist at Rumble. And, you know, but they're not going to remove medical misinformation. So even if they don't agree with the medical information, they're going to leave it there. So that's fine. It's still fairly small compared to YouTube. YouTube has, where was it? It was in here, billions of people on that go to their site on a regular basis. And I had it here, but I lost it. There's about 30 million that go on Rumble on a regular basis, active users. It's grown from about 1 million. YouTube has, I think it's about 1.5 billion. So it's quite a bit bigger than Rumble is. But again, you know, if they're going to, this is a story from the Washington Post saying YouTube's medical, and this is the way they describe it, YouTube's medical misinformation policy since last May, says Washington Post, has banned videos about the coronavirus that could pose a, quote, serious risk of egregious harm, unquote. The site remains a popular refuge for coronavirus falsehoods. Does it really? Are you kidding me? I mean, it's the most Soviet-style Pravda Izvestia propaganda I've ever seen in my life, if you look at YouTube. They push everything that is Fauci or everything that is that have people. Here's why you should not worry about this if you're pregnant. Yeah, just take the shot. Yeah, it's great. It's safe. I'm telling you, I got a white lab coat on. So just take the shot, even if you're pregnant. Not to worry about that. I mean, the shameless lies and propaganda pushed by YouTube, if you go there, are just unbelievable. The Washington Post says, yeah, they're putting up a lot of medical misinformation, and that's not what they mean. They mean anybody who questions the sanity of somebody who had participated in one of these guinea pig programs. Rumble has avoided those debates by allowing such videos to remain on the site unmoderated. Pavlovsky says the company employs 40 content moderators to police the site, slightly more than one moderator for every 1 million users. This is one of the reasons why I'm not interested in pursuing some kind of a pay thing with Rumble. If you're going to moderate the content of people's speech on your public square, you aren't a public square. So we'll still put stuff up on Rumble, but I'm not going to get in bed with these people. Again, I don't want to be Sean Hannity or Pootie Pie. And it brings us back to what I said on Friday. I was talking about the Cyber Symposium. And, you know, I didn't mention the fact that Steve Bannon even had problems with it. You know, he said, well, I thought Mike Lindell had some, was going to bring the receipts, is the way he termed it. So seriously, you get on to this thing. How many months are we into this, Steve? This has been going on for 10 months. Remember the thing that I thought was amazing, and I played it because I said, this is how you're being misdirected. He said, you want your country back? That involves three things. Number one, what happened in Wuhan? Number two, what happened on Election Day, November 3rd? And number three, what happened on January the 6th? I'm sorry, that's not going to get your country back. If I had to put three things down, the three things that Bannon doesn't want to talk about, the three things that Mike Lindell doesn't want to talk about, or Alex Jones, or any of the Stop the Steal people, what they don't want to talk about is what happened under Trump. They don't want to talk about the lockdowns and the massive attacks on the middle class. They don't want to talk about the vaccines, and they don't want to talk about the vaccine passports, a government-granted privilege and a global ID for you to be able to travel to work, to go to school, to do anything. Those are the things that are destroying our liberties in every country. Those are the attacks on our life and liberty. That's far more important than what happened. Everything that he's talking about is looking backwards because they're conservatives and they always look backwards. They never look forward as to what's coming. And they don't want you to see what's coming. Bannon wants you focused on the past so you don't see what's coming and you're going to walk into traffic if you do that. He'd said, hey, Mike Lindell. Mike Lindell's been out there for a long time doing this, and it's now time to get the details, he said, as they were getting ready to do that cyber symposium. Yeah, that's right. It's been a long time. He said people have been following on a day-to-day basis, and they're really keen to get the data and all the evidence. Now, let me just ask, why are people following like a bunch of lemmings, following the Stop the Steal stuff and Mike Lindell stuff? Why are they following them for 10 months without any details? This is why I opposed this. And there were obvious false details that were coming from Pachinik. I said, these are lies. And you're keeping people, as you have this entire last year, you're keeping people distracted from the real threats to their freedom. And so now this whole thing blew up in Bannon's face. You know, they have this thing. He started criticizing Lindell because Lindell kept repeatedly airing a 15-minute propaganda movie about the election. Bannon was there live with his War Room broadcast. How many broadcasts are there called War Room? Just a thought. So he says, I think this is a mistake. I don't think they ought to play this movie again. I want them to be brutally frank. You've laid a theory of the case out here, and that's very powerful. But in laying that case out, you got to bring the receipts. You got to show the details. Show us the data, right? Same thing we're asking when it comes to climate alarmism or when it comes to the CDC, WHO pandemic. Show me the data. I would say the same thing to Mike Lindell. Show me the data. I don't care what somebody's agenda is. I mean, look, we know that the election's corrupt. And I've said that before. Every election in my lifetime has been corrupt. And this one went to a new level. And it went to a new level because Trump enabled it with a lockdown. He enabled a new level of corruption, the mail-in ballots. So, you know, but of course they wouldn't do anything to fix that. They wouldn't do anything to fix it in the runoff for the Senate. So Steve Bannon, prior to this, we're backing up now. Steve Bannon, just before this fiasco began, said, we're in a spiritual war with no middle ground. So again, we've had martial law lockdown. We've had eradication of the middle class as part of that lockdown. You had Trump funding and distributing a bioweapon jab worldwide. And you want to talk about what happened at Wuhan? Are you kidding me? You want to talk about the election when he locked down the election? I mean, he didn't just destroy the integrity of the election. He destroyed the middle class and Main Street. And then you don't want to, you know, you want to talk about January the 6th. Why don't you talk about the global ID that is being set up with all of this stuff? That's what I'm saying. It is a massive misdirection. It's time for people to get away once and for all from these whores, these grifters out there. And that includes Mike Flynn. It includes Sidney Powell. It includes Mike Lindell, Steve Bannon, Alex Jones, Roger Stone, Steve Pachinik, the whole lot of them. Forget about them. They're there as misdirection. They're there to keep you entertained and distracted, like some kind of a sleight-of-hand magician, while they put the chains on your arms and legs. While those chains that are already on your arms and legs solidify and get harder. So in the process of this, Steve Bannon was talking about Babylonian paganism. Now, what does he mean by that? I mean, how does that fit with his three things of Wuhan, the election, and January 6th? How do you get Babylonian paganism out of that? You might find Babylonian paganism in the LGBT movement and the Marxism, but it's not in the three things that he mentioned. Bannon told Howes that if Lindell did prove his thesis, this is before it happened, this is Brandon Howe, that there would be, quote, a process to overturn the 2020 election by working with, quote, attorney generals in states that have this law from the 19th century. He said, quote, they're going to get standing, and they're going to take it to the Supreme Court. Why would you think that you're going to get standing even? I mean, just before You even look at the fact that they've been following like a bunch of lemmings this Pied Piper narrative that's fed to them by Mike Flynn and McInerney and Bochenik and all these people. They've been following it without any details for 10 months. And they're eagerly waiting for the details. Well, we know it's there. We know they got details. And they'll be able to prove this. And they know they're going to get standing in the courts, even though no court has listened to them. And I think that's another indication of how far gone this country is. There ought to be a hearing about this. There ought to be standing. There should have been standing by the president. But, of course, you know, he kind of set this off on the sidelines. He said Lindell has repeatedly, or rather, this is a commentary, Lindell has repeatedly claimed that his evidence is so overwhelming that the court would vote 9-0 to reinstate Trump, except nobody's seen the evidence. On the second day of the conference, one of Lindell's own cyber experts torpedoed the entire premise of the event by telling the Washington Times that the supposedly irrefutable packet data, that's his term, that Lindell had been claiming he would share at the symposium was nowhere in sight. Some journalists speculated that Lindell had fallen for a giant con perpetuated by Dennis Montgomery. Now, I haven't talked about his name. Well, I did mention it back then, but I mean, a lot of people who have really taken the point in criticizing McInerney and Lindell have said, do you understand what a con artist this Dennis Montgomery is? Dennis Montgomery was going to provide the data for this cyber symposium. He, quote, reportedly suffered a stroke on the eve of the symposium and has not been in contact with Lindell's team or any other cyber experts at the symposium. So, this is on the war room, Bannon's own war room. He said, this is all about a defense of the Judeo-Christian West. Why are they just afraid to call it the Christian West? I don't understand. But anyway, I get he's trying to lay the whole foundation of the Bible. But he says, I consider America to be the New Jerusalem. Oh, so you're not looking at the Bible then? I don't know. There isn't any way that you can get out of the Jewish or the Christian religion the fact that America is a New Jerusalem. Ain't there, Steve. Predicated on the tenets of the Judeo-Christian West. And it's becoming more and more evident that this is a spiritual war, and there's no middle ground. Let me tell you, this is a spiritual war, but he's telling you again, he's giving you misdirection. All right, this is not the New Jerusalem. I love the song that they have in the UK that's written by Holst. First, it was in the Planets, and it was part of Jupiter. And it's an amazing symphonic piece. And then all of a sudden it just abruptly stops. And there's this melody that comes through. And he did a hymn called Thaxid. And then you had, they put some lyrics to it as well. You also had the same thing with the song Jerusalem, where they basically create a religion worshiping the state. Now, the song Jerusalem, when you hear it, you know, that's based on a poem. The lyrics are based on a poem by Blake. And it talks about England being, you know, a new Jerusalem. And the idea that, I guess, I don't know if they're trying to pretend that England is one of the lost tribes of Israel or something like that. But again, it's as wacky as what Bannon is doing here with his idea that America is the New Jerusalem. This is not the UK. Yeah, it's now America. These people who will try to elevate a political entity to a religious kind of status is really... That is real spiritual warfare, because they're making an idol out of some political entity. And again, I point out, you know, we've had that with the song Jerusalem. Beautiful melody, but, you know, that along with the I Vow to Thee My Country is the other one that was put together. It's just, you look at these different songs that worship a state, and it's just, you know, we've got to understand where the lines are drawn here. So Bannon says he's unconvinced. Well, I've always was unconvinced, and I was unconvinced because they wouldn't show the evidence 10 months ago. The Biden administration wants airlines off of fossil fuels by 2050. You think this might be the real problem? Stuff like this? So they want you focused on the past so you don't see the Great Reset that's coming. Did Bannon or Lindell ever talk about stopping the Great Reset? They ever talk about what the UN, what Davos, what all these globalists want to have established by 2030? They want everybody to have a global ID. They want everybody to be vaccinated everywhere, every age, for everything, every vaccine that they can imagine. This is what we're fighting. They don't even know what we're fighting. They're out there worshiping the state like it's some kind of a holy thing. You hear them saying, just like the other side, you hear Nancy Pelosi saying, these people on January the 6th came into a sacred place. Well, I'm sorry, but there's not any sacred places in Washington, D.C. I've been there. There's no sacred places there. It's not a religious site, except to these people it is. And so you need to separate yourself from these people, whether they're in the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, left, right, conservative, socialist, communist, these people who worship the state. They're not Christians. They're idolaters. They're secular idolaters. And there's a lot of people who are, you know, professing Christians and pastors who worship the state as if it was God, telling you that you've got to do whatever the government says. No, you don't. Read it. It defines government as government is defined, a government that is not anything other than an evil government that needs to be opposed. God does ordain evil governments. Yes, he does. And we as Christians are called to oppose those, whether it's our own government or whether it's the Nazis or Stalin or something else. We should have the discernment to understand the difference between good and evil. And if you understand that, then you know which governments are legitimate, which ones have legitimate authority, not simply power. So the Biden administration wants airlines off of fossil fuels by 2050. He doesn't want anybody flying. He doesn't want anybody going anywhere. The amazing thing that I saw, I took a step back when I saw this on Politico, Biden's pro-car, pro-gasoline moves. Do you realize how anti-car Politico and the radical left have to be to consider Biden to be pro-car, pro-gasoline? Are you kidding me? Other than the LGBT agenda, the Biden administration has pushed this climate alarmism more than any other administration or more than any other issue. So he is not pro-gasoline. He is not pro-car. But Politico says he is. No, he wants to shut down all flight because you're not going to have big commercial airlines that are going to run off of batteries by 2050. I don't think it's going to happen. And, these guys, he has absolutely no reason to think that there is some kind of an engineering breakthrough that's on the horizon. They don't care about that. As a matter of fact, they would like to put these mandates in and say, since you haven't been able to do that, we're going to shut down all transportation. And it's kind of funny, and I don't think I talked about it last week, but there was an article saying that both Toyota and Honda are not buying into this electric battery car thing. You know, Toyota has come up with its own version of electric car, which is hydrogen-based. And again, if you have a hydrogen-based electric car, it's not going to have any pollution. So you've got to ask yourself, why then would they not support that? Well, it's the same reason that they're supporting the vaccine and trying to outlaw ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or vitamin C or zinc or any of these other things. They have an agenda that they want, and there's multiple reasons why they would push battery cars to the exclusion of everything else. You can make the internal combustion engines cleaner, but they don't want that. You can use hydrogen-fueled electric cars, but they don't want that. It's got to be the battery car. And again, it comes down to what they've already put in this infrastructure bill, which is a tax by mile to be able to track you. But then it goes beyond that, because the electric vehicles, and this is what Toyota was saying, they said this is not practical. You don't have the grid capacity to have everybody or even a significant portion of people using electric cars that charge off of the grid. It simply isn't going to work. You don't have the capacity and you can't build it. Not only that, but you're cutting down the capacity by putting green regulations on the production side of the grid. And so both Honda and Toyota are looking at different things. They're saying, they're making the mistake. The politicians come to them and say, you know, we've got to change all the transportation right now because we've got this emission thing. And so as engineers, Toyota and Honda say, we can fix that. Yeah, an engineering problem, I can fix it. You tell me what the goal is. Your problem is emissions? I got a number of different ways that I can fix that. You know, Mazda's got ideas as well. So you got these great engineers in Japan. You got Mazda. Yeah, we're going to make the internal combustion engine way more efficient, cut down the regulations. And, by the way, we'll boost the power significantly by having kind of a diesel compression stroke in there with the internal combustion engines. Honda's got its own approach, and you got Toyota with multiple approaches like that. But they don't realize that's not what the government says they want. A reduction in emissions is not what they really want. That's not what they want. And so I almost kind of feel sorry for these Japanese corporations, you know? It's like they don't get the joke. See, the joke is that what they say they want is not what they want. What they want is control. What they want is to shut down our lives, to shut down our movement. And Toyota and Honda and Mazda don't understand that yet. So Biden can't be the climate leader if he thinks he's lobbying oil states to produce more fossil fuels, said an organizer for the Sunrise Movement. They would like to have everybody just using sunshine and batteries. We'll see how that works out. Meanwhile, as part of the Great Reset, you got employers who want to use artificial intelligence to monitor employees' health in real time. See, if you work at home, then they're going to have you with this these monitoring devices. They will be able to monitor all of your vital signs, such as your heart rate, your oxygen saturation, your respiratory rate within minutes of being downloaded onto a device. Now, why? As it does that, it does biometric surveillance. It also makes judgments about your health and other issues from the video of your face. And then the findings are intended to be shared with all members. Do I really need to know? And you look at this picture here. Zoom in on that picture. You got the guy in the forefront there. It shows his face, and instead of putting his name down there as a chyron, it's got a chyron that says his heart rate is this, his oxygen saturation is this, his hypertension is this, his stress level is this. I mean, and they even have HRV down there. It's not HIV. They don't do that test on you. But I mean, who needs to know this about your workmates? You really need to know that? No, they want to have that information because, again, the Internet of Things really comes down to you. You're just a thing to them. You're just inventory to them. This particular company in China, Baidu, says that they're going to have robo-taxis that will be cheaper than human drivers by 2025. Well, of course, it's going to be cheaper if they work. That's not the question that they're cheaper. The question is whether or not they work. And I've been talking about this for about a decade as well. Uber, so a former CEO, Travis Kalanick, I think is his name, he said, we're going to go to autonomous driving cars because what makes our cars expensive is that other dude in the car. And so we're going to get that other dude in the car out. So they decided that they would put a ride-sharing thing up there, let you spend the money to use your own car. You make the investment, the capital investment. They pay you a little bit of reimbursement for it, but they're going to slit your throat and throw you out as soon as they can. Based on our current projections, says the Chinese CEO, Baidu, he said, I think by the year 2025 we will cross the line. That's right. I crossed that line a long time ago, which means that the total cost of robo-taxi ride-hailing will be lower than manned vehicle ride-hailing. And after that, I think the scale will be able to grow much larger than it is today. Again, it is rent by the ride. That is their model. And if you don't have the proper social credits, if they don't like your commentary, your beliefs, you haven't been vaccinated, you haven't done whatever else they imagine between now and 2025 or 2030, you will go nowhere. The Chinese were already bragging about that. Before we end the program, I just want to talk real quickly about the mandates and the toxic medicine. You know, we've had California, Pennsylvania, and seven other states have announced that they're going to do COVID vaccine mandates. And we're talking about nine states. I mean, we're talking about 18%. It's about one-fifth of the states. So they're going to do that, as well as cities on both coasts. And so when you see where that is headed, as again, the main thrust is going to be through corporate coercion and through limiting people's ability to access public spaces and to do anything. But as they're pushing this out, and as we know that DHS is talking about the next time they're going to lock us down with some imaginary variant or whatever. I mean, all they have to do now is just pronounce it. You know, oh, yeah, we've got the Mu Nu variant. Instead of Wuhan, we got the Mu Nu. And we're going to shut you down, whatever the Greek letter happens to be. And Biden wants to make sure that we're going to have, first they start out by saying nobody's going to come into the country, not even with a negative test, not going to fly in unless you've got a vaccine passport, unless you have the vaccine. So then the next step is to ban all interstate travel, which is what he's already talked about, the possibility of doing that. And it's not a possibility, it's what they're planning. They're just getting people accustomed to that as they move the Overton window. At the same time, they're letting people come across the border, they're releasing people, and they're flying people who are unvaccinated and who are testing positive. So there's never any end to the hypocrisy. Again, this is not about any virus. This is about a threat to our lives that the government proposes. So they've introduced a bill in Congress to ban people from flying based on vaccination status, putting them on a no-fly list if you don't get the vaccine. This is where we're headed. And we need to understand, and let me just play for you, Michael Yaden talking about what is really behind this.
Thank you to everyone listening. In terms of the remark all over the alternative media, it's not my choice. I would have been very happy to have been interviewed by any mainstream TV, radio, newspaper, and I did write to and phone all of them. But as you know, I hope you know, there was complete suppression of anyone's opinion other than the dominant narrative. Now, the reason I've been speaking out from the beginning was it was just blindingly obvious as early as April 2020 that we were being lied to, just literally absurd. And so those of you who might think, well, you know, I'm a conspiracy theorist, I will say there is an international plan. There's nothing theoretical about it. For example, each country, scores of them, had their own pandemic preparedness plans. Of course they did. And they're all slightly different. And then they all threw them away about the same time. And then they all adopted what I call the eight COVID lies. Now, if you've ever seen any of my interviews, you'll know what they are. And if you've even got an A-level in biology, as my humanities graduate daughters say, you don't even need that. You just need common sense and not to be completely stupid. But your government's been lying to you for 15, 18 months. I'm sorry, they are. Now, why would I bother to speak out? I was an early retired guy who'd made quite a few millions of pounds because I was quite good at what I did. And I had a nice, happy, relaxed life. And I've made no friends and lost lots of my life over the last year. So the only reason I'm speaking out is to tell you what I just said, that you're being lied to, and there's a very bad reason for that.
Again, just like RFK Jr., he said the same thing. He said, I had a comfortable life. I didn't need to get into this controversy, but I just can't see this being done to people and not speak out. And so that is what we all are called to do. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about some of the lawsuits I didn't get to today that are starting to roll out to push back against these mandates. Thank you for joining us today.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project, to make sure the commoners own nothing. and the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.